Well done.
Grand entrance.
Yeah, the grand entrance. All right. Thank you, and sorry.
No, absolutely. So with that, I am going to call to order a special meeting for the Greville Beach City Council for Monday, June 18, 2012. Would you all please stand and rise with us for the Pledge of Allegiance this evening?
Mayor Pro Tem, you want to lead us?
Yes. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call.
Here. Present. Here.
Here.
Here. Thank you, Donna. Let's see. Public communications. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council on any item within the jurisdiction of this council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes. Please bear in mind that the council cannot take action on any items that are not on the agenda. Is there anyone that would like to address the council in public communications this evening? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close it to bring it back to the council, and let's move into our business. This is item number one on our agenda this evening. This is a presentation of the proposed fiscal year 13 budget. City Manager Perrault.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. As you'll recall, on May 7th, 2012, staff presented to the council a preliminary budget. At that time, the discussion included a general overview, discussed the city's goals and work program. We went through and reviewed most of the city's major funds, and as a result of that discussion, we received direction from the council. Before you, you have the draft budget, which represents the culmination of several months of work, as I'm sure that you're aware. Actually, the development of this budget extends further back than May, probably to early February. We began actually working on this. It's a financial plan that will enable the city to maintain critical services while living within the city's constrained resources. It was also based on the goals and work program that was adopted by the council and had been previously distributed a week or so ago to you. It incorporates what staff believes is the council's desire to operate in a fiscally sustainable level while maintaining local services and continuing to move forward with economic development. The FY13 budget is a budget that had its share of challenges and complication in its development. So you all know the status of the economy, the property tax, which makes up 52% of the general fund budget, has declined over the last 3 years. And by approximately 10 to 12%. Conversely, staff has worked to reduce the city's general fund budget to a level that we feel will be sustainable with current revenues, and as recommended, would not use the reserve funds in the coming year. FY13, as you may remember, is a bit different for us because it's the first year in which we've had to deal without the redevelopment agency. Redevelopment agency funded a lot of projects, capital projects, and economic development projects, and we're without annually $1 million this year. In addition to that, the Building and Planning Enterprise Fund has been reintegrated into the general fund, largely because we've seen the downturn in terms of local building and planning projects for the time being, and essentially operating as an enterprise fund, those costs were not being covered. Consequently, in reintegrating both of these funds into the general fund and to the organization as a whole, we've reduced personnel costs, and then those remaining costs have been absorbed by the general fund. We're actually recommending that the citywide budget have a combined appropriations level of $15,004,289 for FY13. This provides sufficient funding to maintain basic services and maintain critical infrastructure while completing $3 million in key capital projects, including both the West Avenue Enhancement Project and the Grover Beach Municipal Network. Turning to the general fund revenues and transfers will amount to a little more than $6.9 million, and expenditures as currently budgeted would equal $7.2 million. Planned expenditures include the savings that would occur as a result of the recommended reduction in personnel and the consolidation of services within City Hall. As you note, the current general fund estimated budget has been deficit has been reduced from $800,000 to $319,394. Use of reserves can be avoided by accomplishing any combination of the following. Essentially, it's the extension of the current employee concessions estimated at $285,000. It's important to remember that this is still a part of the meet and confer process, and ultimately how much of that we'll be able to gain will be dependent on the outcome of negotiations. Reduction in the contribution of the five cities fire consolidation of services is not occurring quite as quickly as we had hoped. I think that we're looking now at the end of July or 1st of August to be able to provide a center counter where we'll be able to provide customer service to all of our departments in City Hall. Personnel, as you know, is recommended to be reduced through in a variety of ways. There are four retirements and layoff, and with the layoff of two full-time positions and four part-time positions. Got to tell you that all four of the retirements are moving along pretty much as we had scheduled. In terms of those individuals that are subject to the layoff, all employees have received a intent to terminate. Final separation will be dependent upon the final budget adoption, final action taken by the council. As we go through this process, staff is continuing to review options to avoid layoff of permanent staff. The department reorganization, we're recommending the combination of the Parks and Recreation and Community Development departments into a new department that would be termed the Community Development Services Department. There is, as noted in the report, staff reductions are scheduled to occur in both departments. The new department will be overseen by the current community development director, but the parks and recreation program and management of facilities will remain basically intact as a division within this new department. They will continue to provide services just as they have before to the Parks Recreation and Beautification Commission. Work activities within that division will continue to be overseen by the Parks and Recreation Director, who my recommendation will become the Parks and Recreation Programs Director. The job description will need to be rewritten and will be broadened to include marketing and some elements of economic development. When that individual is functioning on those items, she will report directly to me. I think an important note about this consolidation of departments is receptionist and customer service duties that were previously provided within the department itself will be provided now through the consolidated service counter. Agency requests, you have a number of agencies that are here, including the Chamber of Commerce, the Economic Vitality Corporation, San Luis County Visitors and Conference Bureau, and the Housing Trust Fund has put in a request in the Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo County. I want you to know that You have before you a revised letter from the San Luis Obispo County Visitors and Conference Bureau, and actually the Save the Coast has been adjusted to $5,000, that request for participation. Moving on to the rest of the budget, as you know, Stormwater Fund was integrated within the Wastewater Fund. That's why you'll note that those personnel and supplies costs, and especially in that fund, have increased a little bit because, again, it's a combined effort. The total budgeted revenue for this fund is $2,136,644. And the expenditures are budgeted at $2,104,371. So the budget is balanced, and cash at year end, and that's the end of June 30th, 2013, is expected to be $2,432,160. Water Fund is expected to have revenues of $3,072,437. And expenditures of $3,013,598. Again, the water fund is balanced. Largely, we're able to achieve this because of the rate adjustment that was implemented in the spring and will continue through the entire coming year, and ongoing cost-cutting measures. We will continue to monitor that fund because I just think it's important that we review those rates on an annual basis. The fund is projected to recover. As you'll recall, at one time we were in a deficit mode with the water fund. It's now in the process of recovering, and we're expecting positive cash back.
Time to ask staff some questions. So do any members of the council have a question of the city manager?
I do.
Councilmember Peterson.
I had a number of questions, which I did email last night once I'd finished reading through everything, and a number of the questions were answered, which was helpful, so we don't need to review those again. I did want to ask a few of them because I think some of them may still not have been answered. On the resolution number 13, appropriations, in paragraph 5 there was a typo in the number. And I wondered if you could give me that the correct number on that one.
Gayla, if you could respond to that.
What are you referring to then?
Resolution That's number 13 under appropriations, okay. Paragraph 5. And there's a figure starting with 8 million.
Yes, it should be 8,297,516.
Okay. So 2 is the missing digit. Okay, thank you. And unless we answered the question about the non-departmental, I've got a question for the chamber. We'll talk to them when that comes up. Let's see. Many of them have been answered, so thank you. That's helpful. I was curious, and I think this is actually a question for Gayla. Can I do Gayla questions too? Or
sure.
Okay. I noticed that the fines, the collection of fines, is lower than it has been previously. Can you shed any light on why that might be?
I will defer to the police chief.
Chief?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Most of our county fines, parking fines, state fines have all been gradually decreasing over the last number of years because the state has taken more of the funds. We have less staff to write fines and citations. Our numbers are down a little bit, so the fines will be down a little bit. But mostly it's because of the different shares that different county and the state are taking from that.
So they're doing a take there as well, not just on the economic development.
Right. For parking fines now, we're losing about a little over $12 a citation, where about 3 years ago we weren't losing that. So it changes the bottom dollar of it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Now I had another question on, need to find it here, but on the This is a gala question again. I noticed that in line 4240 under the general fund that the phone has gone to about 7,000, where previously it was about half that. Is there some reason why we're anticipating that the phone costs will be significantly higher?
Okay. Actually, that was not phone charges.
Oh, you're right.
It's postage and mailing costs. And those postage charges are based on the prior year's postage meter usage. So we look at the postage meter usage once a year and then allocate based on the previous year's usage. So you'll see ups and downs in all of the programs accordingly based on how the postage was used.
As we go through the years, though, it's been hovering around 3,500, as I recall, and all of a sudden now, last year, then it was almost 7,000.
If I'm remembering correctly on this one, the BTCs are no longer done through a bulk mailing. We take care of the postage in-house on some of the renewals for that. So that's one of the reasons that our department has an increase in postage.
What's a BTC?
Business tax certificate, I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay. All right. So it's been enough to actually almost double our costs.
And there's actually increases in postage, too. So you'll see increases due to postage increases by the post office.
Thank you very much. And then I have one for our public works director. Shall we wait or?
Ask
go ahead
questions.
And ask it.
The question is on the public works department, page 55, the last line. There was mention of a sidewalk program, and I just wasn't familiar with what that sidewalk program is, and I wondered if you could shed a little bit of light on that, as I believe it was one of your goals for the next year.
I think it's a staff goal. What I'll ask is Mr. Ray to elaborate. It's the same goal that we had last year, and it's an attempt to try and identify some funding that we would be able to put aside for a sidewalk repair program.
The reason I was a little bit I wondered about it is because it talked about also working with property owners, and so I didn't know what that partnership was all about. I just don't recall having heard about that. It sounds good. I just wondered what it is.
Mr. Ray.
Testing. First of all, thank you, City Manager, and City Manager.
In response to my email, I remember that we're expecting to have much higher funds coming through, and that we were hoping that could cover some additional projects. And I just wondered where we were in that process.
Well, the amount that's in the budget is the final amount that we received in FY12. It really consists of carryover dollars plus program income. That's still as a part of the county program. We are now just venturing out on our own, so to speak. The first opportunity to apply for funding will be in August, and that will be housing-related dollars. Our next opportunity to apply for funding will be in January, and that is really what we're targeting for the larger either economic development projects or hardscape projects. The federal government has gone to kind of a one-size-fits-all release of funds, and that's when the next one will be due.
Thank you. And I think you may have answered this one, too, but under the budget companion, page 18, there were maintenance services of $32,000 a year. Can you tell
me? Those are primarily park maintenance. We have the contract with the parks landscape contractor, and the reduction in landscape was through the end of this fiscal year. This year, with the new fiscal year, we're actually recommending going back to the maintenance level. But we are going to go out and send that contract out to bid.
Okay. And then I'm hoping I sent this one to you. I was curious about when you talked about – actually, that's a Charter City question, so I'll leave that for the Charter City discussion. So that's all I have for now.
Oh, very good. Councilmember Monar?
Yes, thank you. Can you tell me the difference between revenues and appropriations, please?
revenues is actually an expenditure. Appropriations is actually an expenditure. Revenues is actually income.
Okay, I wanted to make sure of that. Thank you. And then on for under expenditures, under the general fund summary here, talks about salaries and benefits. Does this amount of $4,392,000, does that include the layoffs or not?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so I did a little subtraction here between the estimated actual from last year and this year. And also, I have another question concerning this too. So there's only a savings of $46,652.
The reason that there is only a net savings, there are a couple of different reasons. One, there are payouts that are occurring with those that are retiring that will be one-time only costs, and a portion of those will be reflected in the general fund. And then, as I previously mentioned, there was also the reallocation of funds due to the redevelopment agency, as well as the enterprise fund being reintegrated, and some of those staff costs had to be reallocated back to the general fund.
Okay, then also my concern is we do have a section here on overtime. If we end up having to have overtime, wouldn't it be better to have a part-time person take care of the different needs, as opposed to paying the higher salary for someone who's going to have overtime?
First of all, we have very little overtime in the general fund.
But by reducing here, even though we're changing departments, we're not going to trigger?
It is not my belief that we will, for the simple reason that essentially what we're taking is we're maintaining essential staff positions, and we're eliminating those that are part-time positions that are not essential to the operation of the department, and re-spreading those costs. Now, I'm not going to say that that's not going to mean that schedules might change and things may end up having to be done a little bit differently, but I don't think we'll incur overtime expenditures.
Okay, and then under supplies and services, why is that jumped up so much higher from the year before?
Because Gayla, maybe you can also provide part of that answer, but I know that services generally are up because the fire district's fire authority's total budget is in that services and supplies.
That's part of the response, yes. I'm kind of scanning through real quick.
Also then, down when we go into departments, so I didn't have a chance to ask, what is non-departmental? What does that include? Is that staff?
Non-departmental is just primarily two sets of charges. One is, again, that's within the budget itself. That's where the fire is maintained. And then there are a couple of other very minor costs in addition to that. Is that correct, Gayla?
Yeah, the three items that are included in the non-departmental this year include a $5,000 administrative fee for the CalPERS Medical. It's part of the medical insurance. It can't. There's no way to attribute it to any specific department. They just charge us a general fee. The second is legal services related to Five Cities Fire, and the third, and we get reimbursed from Five Cities Fire for that, so there is a corresponding revenue line item, and then the agreement with the Five Cities Fire Authority.
All right, thank you. And can you explain to me what legislative is?
Legislative is the management office is divided into different sections. Legislative is primarily that part of the office that is in support of the city council meetings, and that is the city clerk's activities. All of those are carried within the legislative.
So you figured we're going to cost $20,000 more?
That's what we're indicating.
Okay. And why under with planning and building, where did the building come from? Where was that before?
That was part of the enterprise.
Okay. But also for planning, too?
Yes.
So it jumped up all that much. Okay. And
it didn't jump up. I think what you're looking at is part of the, in the general fund budget, there was a portion of the community development budget that was already located in the general fund. When we combined the enterprise portion of that fund, it moved those dollars into the general fund and caused that fund to increase substantially.
All right, thank you for clarifying that. Also, why are legal services going up from 81.5 to 108,425?
Part of that is the legal services that were associated with building and planning are now also included in the general fund.
They are. Okay, thank you.
And as well as some of that had been
redevelopment.
Okay, all right, thank you. And then we are in negotiations for our regular personnel.
Yes.
Can I ask about that? Is that when we have that, I know we have a furlough program. Are any of, does any of the staff or anything, that negotiation, does that include any kind of automatic increase in salaries?
No. We can, city attorney tells me we can talk about last year, but there are no automatic cost of living increases.
There isn't.
No.
Okay, then what explains increase in personnel then? Is that other costs?
Again, it is largely due to the reallocation of the redevelopment agency staff that was associated with the redevelopment agency, as well as with community development enterprise, and folding that back into the general fund has caused some personnel costs to go up.
Okay. And then one last question. I don't know if this can be answered either. Now, we're all aware of what happened with the voting down in San Diego. Do our personnel, do they pay a percentage of their
They pay all of their portion of retirement.
Employees pay all of the employee share of PERS.
So there's an employee share and then...
There's an employee share and an employer share. The employees pay the entire employee share.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. So with the indulgence, I don't know if Karen, did you have questions?
I didn't. It was well written and easily understandable to me. Thank you.
Okay. So it's 6:03, and what I'd like to do, and I know that we've got at least representatives from three agencies who we've said we're going to allow them to have a presentation, so that'll put us at 6:18, then I'll take as many comments from the public, and then it looks like we're going to have to continue this item, but we also need to consider adopting, looks like, a resolution authorizing no more necessary expenses until adoption in F13 budget. City Attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor. It is your option, Mayor. I'm sorry? The microphone off? It doesn't work. Oh, okay.
But that's all right.
Here we go. Fair that we do annually. This is a little bit more information as opposed to regarding the amount that was requested. I'm sure you guys are all fairly familiar or more than fairly familiar with the Stone Soup Festival itself. What we are asking this year for is a combined total of $7,500. I know that your guys's information that was sent to you before said $7,500 cash, but we've actually broken that down in meetings since that was sent to you guys. And what we would like to do is we would like to get $5,000 in city sponsorship, and then we would like to get $2,500 in manual labor from the city in things along the lines of putting up the barricades, putting up the turn into North 10th Street over there, that turn off over there, and we're requesting that more for liability purposes than for monetary purposes, more than anything. So what I've laid out for you guys in here is a little bit about the direction that we're taking this year. We are doing a great big push to bring people into the area as opposed to what it has been in the past, which has been a primarily
marketed to the five cities area, you know, Rio Grande, Pismo, and Grover Beach, of course. We have put together what we're calling a street team to take care of the entire Central Coast, go up to Paso Robles, go all the way down to Santa Maria, San Ynez area, as well as we are doing some advertising in Fresno, Visalia, Santa Cruz, Monterey, and San Francisco to try to bring people here longer is the idea, because it is right before Labor Day, and we'd like to get them here the entire week so that they're spending the weekend before and the weekend of and the entire week here on the Central Coast. So that's pretty much it. I've laid out the benefits in there for you guys. It's pretty close to the same thing that you guys have received in the past. I've also allocated exactly where we would like to spend the funds. I'm sure you can see that there. And really, the funds that we have always received from the city have really been the basis of the entire event. So we use the funds primarily for the stage, which it's pretty obvious why we need the stage, and the sound, our sound reinforcement outside. So those are unfortunately the funds that we're requesting don't pay for all of the sound reinforcement, but we do actually pay a little bit more for our sound reinforcement just because it is a music event. So we thought that it was important to spend a little bit more money on the sound. We have tried to save money on the sound in the past, and our ears have paid for it, unfortunately.
Very good. Thank you. And let the record show Anthony Solis, representative of the chamber.
Yes, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Is there a budget for this?
Well, he is, I believe it sounds like you're requesting $7,500, or actually $5,000 cash, $2,500 in city services. That's something for us to consider as part of the budget.
Correct. If you guys need a copy of the budget for this, I do have that available as
That's
well.
That's what I asked.
I did have one question.
Okay. Okay. Debbie.
I know that you all are working really diligently to get sponsorships on this, and are meeting every Monday morning. So I know that you're working very hard on this and making really good progress. One of the initial letters that came out to the city said that we would be receiving, and I don't know if this is still part of your plan, but I wanted a little bit, I didn't understand what it was about, that there would be surveys designed to collect demographics, including questions important to the city of Grover Beach. Can you explain that? Is that still on the table, or what was
that? Sure, it is. And the results of those are something that we would like to provide to you guys. What we've done in the past is we've based all of our numbers and things along those lines, which it's really been numbers. It hasn't been really demographics based on age or anything along those lines, on the sales of our vendors. Has really been, and it's been anywhere between 8,000 and 12,000 people walking through, attendees. So this year we are planning on asking more detailed questions, and we're going to be doing that mainly through not only the surveys that we send out to the vendors and the entertainers, but also through a survey that we're going to have at the Chamber of Commerce booth. And there, which is pretty much the kind of the hub of what's going on there. And of course, if anyone wants any drinks, they have to come to us anyway. So it's a very central spot for us. It's very easy for us to collect information as far as where they came from. Do they live in the area? Have they ever been here before? Do they plan on coming back? Things along those lines. And those are things that we're planning on not only supplying to you guys, but some other agencies.
Our communities, and to promote startups, business growth, and retention of business and attraction of businesses to the region. And there's a lot of ways that we do that. One of the most important ways that we do that is to provide access to capital. So in addition to being an access point for venture capital and angel network funding, we also administrate two loan programs. One of them is a microloan program for loans up to $5,000, and that would be for a business owner who perhaps wants to buy some new equipment. The other is a loan guarantee program, which is for a business owner that perhaps wants to start a new venture and he doesn't have 5 years of history to stand on, or he's having some difficulty in meeting the underwriting requirements. In that case, the EBC would come alongside that business owner. We would guarantee that loan, enable him to access that financing for that growth or for that new business to occur. We're also an advocate for businesses on economic issues that impact countywide, such as large-scale solar or broadbands or things of that nature. And in addition, we provide our resources for international trade. We're partnering right now with the Visitors and Conference Bureau on enhancing our air services to the county. We think that's a critical component to our local economy and could be a huge driver for potential international trade. We think that we really need to do everything we can do to have the best services here. In addition to that, we also do industry-specific economic analysis. In 2007, we put together the wine and tourism industry, which provided us with some great information to help move that industry forward. And more recently, in 2010, we've undertaken the Economic Strategy Project, and that's what I really want to share with you this evening. The Economic Strategy Project was championed by Supervisor Adam Hill and Frank Meacham. They chaired the steering committee in partnership with board members of the EVC and some local industry leaders. The project undertook an in-depth analysis of our local economy, where we learned that really it's six clusters of industry that are responsible for 90% of our job growth since 1995. This slide just shows you on the vertical axis the concentrations of those industries, and on the horizontal axis how fast they are growing in comparison to the rest of the nation. Those six clusters of industry are the building design and construction cluster, green energy, health services, knowledge and innovation, which is your education, technology, and creative services, specialized manufacturing, and the uniquely Slo County cluster, which is our tourism, wine, and agricultural sectors. I just want to note here that we partner with the uniquely Slo County cluster a little bit differently than we do the other clusters because they have such a strong framework already in place. They're working with their business improvement districts, with the Chamber of Commerce, with their local industry leaders, and so they don't need us to come in and provide that for them. And so we partner with them on projects like the U.S. Airways ad that reached 4.2 million people to brand our county, and the work that we're doing now with the air services. In January of 2011, we entered the implementation phase, which has been infinitely more challenging. We're now working with 250 business owners on 20 action teams. And the action teams, I would love to be able to go into them in detail, but I know that Mr. Schultz, Mayor Schultz, would probably kill me if I did. To consolidate them, it's really enhanced engagement with our local governments, with our educational institutions, and more exciting to me, cross-cluster engagement. We have now uniquely Slo understanding why the specialized manufacturing, needs specific support for their clients that are visiting here to increase that potential for them to come back again. And working with building, design, and construction, the knowledge and innovation, and the specialized manufacturing clusters to look at how much expansion do we need? Where might we find those sites for that expansion? Is there an opportunity for collaboration on pre-planning some of those and making it to facilitate that expansion? So some cross-cluster work is happening, which is very exciting to me. We're also active on the state level. The Economic Strategy Project, in partnership with 14 other regions across the state, has convened to look at what are our consolidated economic priorities. And as part of regional forums that were held across the 14 regions, we then came together in Santa Clara at a California Economic Summit, where those industry clusters and those economic initiatives were laid out for state legislation to identify how they could best support our regional priorities. That work is ongoing. They have now split out into action teams and are working on some bill-ready white papers and things like that. So in conclusion, we do understand and acknowledge that it's a very challenging time, but we don't think it's the time to slow down the work that we're doing. We have great momentum build. We have an increased level of engagement. We're working closely with our workforce investment board to engage them with our cluster members to talk about what job development needs to look like. And we just really would encourage you to support us and also the partnership that we have with the Visitors and Conference Bureau, because we're making significant progress there as well. And also, thank you so much for the support that you've given us in the past.
Great. Thank you, Christine.
You're welcome.
Stacy.
Later then?
Yeah. Do you have a question?
Well, I wanted to know when she talked about the loans and everything. Have they specifically helped any Grover Beach business?
Given that you mentioned collaborating with us on our technology plan, and I I know we've made a presentation to the EVC. I know that Mike Manchuk has been very supportive, and that many of the other board members and are very supportive. I wondered what form you that would be taking. What you mean by that?
Well, at this juncture, we have an application in for an Economic Development Administration grant that would possibly provide some resources to that.
That's
but we
good.
Don't know for certain yet whether we'll get that funding. We should hear. Mm-hmm. They said it would should you know in the near term rather than the long term.
So you'd be using that to help us get our network established.
It has to
regional.
Do with disaster recovery, mm-hmm. so it's primarily protecting the network and then mm-hmm. using it to its highest capacity.
Okay, yeah. Thank mm-hmm. you.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you, Christine. Stacy, you're on.
Good evening, and I'm Molly Cano. I'm the Director of Sales and Marketing.
I'm sorry, Molly.
It's all right. I'm the Director of Sales and Marketing for the San Luis Obispo County Visitors and Conference Bureau. So thank you very much for inviting me this evening. I would just like to... Are you going to... Perfect. Thank you. I would just like to show you your San Luis Obispo County Visitors and Conference Bureau is Grover Beach's strategic partner in tourism marketing. We work in collaboration with Visit California, and as you can see, Visit California spends nearly $105 million in their annual budget on domestic and international travel marketing. This equates to nearly 213 million visitors to California, which you can see San Luis Obispo County gets a small sliver of that. Same thing in terms of tourism spending. Our opportunity here is to grow the pie when we're taking a look at how much potential we have to come into San Luis Obispo County. The opportunity for this is through strategic partnerships. The tourism landscape as it relates to the Central Coast, California is gaining traction, as you saw, through strengthening its positioning through its marketing programs, as well as generating TOT. Now, as you know, TOT is revenue that's generated through the transient occupancy tax, which goes directly into your general fund, which does pave your streets and pay for your wages as well, creates jobs. We here in San Luis Obispo County have seen great strides in the progress we've made to increase TOT. We're looking at about nearly 9% increase in TOT. Here in Grover Beach specifically, that's about a 12% increase year over year. The VCB has three major objectives. Our primary objectives are to brand and promote the county as a destination for pure play, strengthen strategic partnerships among the county, regional, and statewide partners to leverage our marketing and investment programs, including those partnerships that we have here with you in the city of Grover Beach, as well as partnerships like we have with the Economic Vitality Corporation, which you heard about just before. Third, we are creating and sustainably creating an equitable funding model in order to keep our marketing programs and our marketing efforts strong. Now, what that means here within Grover Beach, one of the strategic partnerships that we've developed and have continued to enhance is our partnership with your City Parks and Rec, working with Kathy, as well as having Debbie on our board of directors in order to encourage us to keep us included in the decisions that you're making here in Grover Beach and how we can partner to help promote the things that you have. For example, we worked closely with Debbie to create the National Train Day. We put out a press release on behalf of the city of Grover Beach that promoted National Train Day. As we know, your train station is something that's very important as it relates to tourism marketing for you. We've also been partnering with Kathy as we create and develop our Savor the Central Coast program, one of our marketing programs that we do. Kathy was just involved in a meeting as we look towards planning for 2012 Savor and really developing ways that can leverage marketing programs for you. So not just having you present in the pavilion or in partnership with, say, the train, but also being able to create an opportunity for you to capture some of those folks that you can then leverage to market to come back again and again, which will come up for you as well with your new lodge that would be coming on board. There are many marketing programs that we just scrolled past that the VCB also does. You can see here some examples of some of the marketing programs that we do specifically on our website. Our website receives almost nearly 500,000 visitors a year, which is an opportunity for you to actually then get your message out and the programs like the Stone Soup Music Festival to promote those programs to potential visitors that are already looking at San Luis Obispo County and how can Grover Beach be on that map. We recognize that it is a difficult time right now when it comes to funding and that revenues, that budgets are being cut, and it's hard to be able to place funding where it has been asked. We here have put together a taxable rents formula that is a fair and equitable funding formula.
Councilmember Mona.
I asked this last time when you were here, but I never got an answer. So from Save the Central Coast last year, and in particular, any particular things that happened, can you tell us, money-wise, how much has come towards Grover Beach?
Well, I can tell you that in terms of our TOT tracking that we work directly with your city on, it shows to us that you are up to nearly about $150,000 in terms of TOT that we've been tracking with you. That shows about a 12%. So the way that we are actually able to track how our marketing programs work is against those TOT values.
But I was asking in relation to the Save of the Central Coast.
So within
you didn't have, you know, did you have any particular, you know, any information to share with us about how much we benefited from it?
Yeah, so one of the things that you guys did with Savor the Central Coast as well, you had partnered with us in the pavilion last year, and one of the things that your city did was collect actually names. You had folks that were able to enter into baskets that they were then able to capture these names that you can use for additional marketing. So one of the things that we do for you is be able to give you the platform to share your message with the folks that we have that attend Savor the Central Coast.
Thank you for not answering my question.
Thank you, Molly. Any other questions? Okay, thanks. So let's see if there's any. I'm reluctant to recess at this point because there's been a lot of information, so I want to see if there's anyone from the public that would like to make comment tonight. So please come forward and state your name and city of residence for the record.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor Scholes and City Council. My name is Lenny Grant, and I'm here tonight on behalf of the San Luis Obispo County Housing Trust Fund. I'm the vice chair of that organization. We've benefited in the past from your support, and I do have an example, at least, of that, as well as some upcoming projects that we're looking to help fund. We are a nonprofit corporation that provides funding and technical assistance to help to create affordable housing in San Luis Obispo County. We've provided $8.3 million in financing to assist 229 affordable housing units since 2005. Our financing's leveraged over $35 million in construction contracts locally since 2010. Last year, your assistance helped us provide a bridge loan to the Women's Shelter Program that helped us secure a state grant to purchase 4 homes in Grover Beach that now provide transitional housing for victims of domestic violence. We're also trying to help Brad Vernon in his quest to provide some affordable housing in Grover Beach. That application is really close to being, it's actually been made and going through some details with your staff right now. So obviously recognize the dire state of the budget. However, if you choose to provide funding to these valuable organizations, we'd like to be on the list. You provided us $5,000 last year, and whatever you'd like to provide would be greatly appreciated. So thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you, Lenny. Is there anyone else? Okay, so at this point, Mr. Lee, are you coming up?
Thank you for that. Sorry, for the momentary lapse of moving forward. Jeff Lee with your chair of the Parks and Rec and Beautification Commission. Just here to, as I have in the past, support all of our staff, but really to support Parks and Rec staff and the job that they do in promoting our city and providing an opportunity for our residents to come out and play. Because as we know, parks make life good. Some of the stuff that Parks and Rec has done, the director has, on her own time and initiative and money, has taken on the presidency of the CPRS, or the California Park and Rec Society, District 8 presidency, which runs from Simi Valley up to Paso. And obviously that provides her an opportunity to really market the city and really to work with other folks in the area to develop things that she can bring back to the city, and then it provides a better presence for us in the state as well. And then obviously the rest of our Parks and Rec staff, you can see at all of our special events, which I know one of the challenges you had provided previously was to try and get those funded more than 50%, less than 50% out of the general fund. And as you'll see, is looking through the budget, that actually has been successfully accomplished, if I'm reading the budget correctly. So we've done that, and we'll continue to do that. The summer concert series is a great event. The Holiday of Lights, the Carved Pumpkin, all provide an opportunity for residents to come forward and play and to stay in the city, which then obviously brings forward TOT, other opportunities for the city, which some of the other speakers spoke about. So just here to say thank you to staff, thank you for you. Realize it's a hard budgetary cycle, but everybody's doing what we can. So, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you.
On June 4th, council met in closed session on two items. First one being conference with real property negotiations with regard to APN 060-162018. The second one was public employee performance evaluation for the city attorney. After convening back to the open session, there were no reportable actions reported.
Very good. Thank you, city attorney. And at this point, the council will review the order of the agenda as presented by staff and decide if we want to make any changes. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda as presented by staff this evening?
I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as presented.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there is no discussion on the motion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. So we are going to proceed with the agenda as presented by staff this evening. I believe there are extra copies on the table over there. First item is the ceremonial calendar. This is item number one, and there we have several certificates of appreciation to Spring Garden Tour participants. And so Ms. Petker and Ms. O'Donnell.
Honorable Mayor and Council Members, thank you. I'm Kathy Parker, Parks and Recreation Director, and this is Nora O'Donnell, our Recreation Coordinator. I'd like to invite our Parks, Recreation, Beautification Commissioners up here, please, to join us. And while they come up, just to let the audience know that the commissioners are the volunteers who helped us with the Spring Garden Tour. They also assisted at all of the garden sites. We had a record number of gardens. How many did we have this year?
10
gardens to feature. We have Commissioner Ellie Ross, Commissioner Heidi Boatman, Vice Chair D. Santos, and our Chair Jeff Lee here this evening. I'll give you a little information about the Spring Garden Tour, and then we'll go into the awards. The Spring Garden Tour has been a city special event for about 16 years, and it was begun by then named Grover Beautiful Committee. This event is a perfect example of how parks make life better, the motto of the California Parks and Recreation Society. The goal of the event is to acknowledge the residents of Grover Beach for creating beautifully landscaped yards, for using drought-tolerant plantings, using creative ideas for solving unique gardening dilemmas, and through their hard work, beautifying the city overall. It also gives others the chance to learn about different gardening techniques and improve their own outdoor spaces. What's best about this event is the way it brings the community together and enables residents to share their creativity and hard work with their neighbors. This year, the weather was beautiful, and we had guests from all over the Central Coast, as well as many who are visiting from out of the area. And we'd like to take this opportunity to thank other volunteers who helped us at the event as well. Jerry Roseborough, Harold and Shirley Grog, Sam and Leah Greeley, and Pam Spicer, and also city staff Nora O'Donnell and Jennifer Fitzgerald helped as well. I'm going to turn it over to Nora, and she's going to describe how the gardens were selected and how the homes were selected. And we would like to also invite the homeowners up at this time. So You could come up. If you're here for the Spring Garden Tour, please join us over here. Thank you.
Come on, Molly. Okay. Nominations for the gardens that were on the tour were accepted through the middle of May. Some of the participants self-nominated their homes and or businesses, and some were nominated by other residents. Also, each Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commissioner has a zone or an area that they canvass and then choose homes and businesses to nominate as well. There were some really beautiful gardens, to look at this year, including the city-sponsored demonstration garden at Ramona Garden Park. This is planted with many varieties of low water and drought tolerant plants, and it's maintained on a volunteer basis by Nicholas Ambrose of Mission Pacifica Landscape Development. So we like to thank Nick at the time. So now we want to recognize those who helped with the garden tour. So the first one was 551 West Grand Avenue. You may be familiar with it as Mr. Glenn's House of Ladies Fashions. The first thing to notice at this site was the ornate iron gate, which opens onto a garden full of potential and a loving work in progress. So Cynthia Glenn said that it is her dream to create a beautiful and calm oasis to share with friends and passerby. So Cynthia, can you come up? Thank you, Cynthia. You down there. Okay, so 250 North 10th Street. It's the home of Molly Christian, who's also the aunt of one of our Parks and Rec commissioners. This is a charming old-fashioned garden with colorful flowers galore, a trellis entrance with streaming lavender blossoms, fragrant roses, bright purple princess flower, etc. And one interesting little note, this is garden is maintained by 97-year young Aunt Molly.
Yeah.
The next one is 158 North 10th Street. And this is the home of Ellie Ross. She's one of our Parks and Rec commissioners. Come sit a spell in the shade, sip iced tea, and let your eyes wander over a whimsical display of fanciful artwork. If you've ever been to Ellie's Cafe at either locations, you'd know what I'm talking about. It's truly a whimsical garden. Thank you. And 850 Atlantic City Avenue, this is where the plant exchange was held, and it was hosted by Dee Santos, our vice chair of the Parks and Rec Commission. She always makes everyone feel welcome, of course. It's a bring a plant, take a plant event. So it's a chance for participants to try something new in their garden by sharing from their garden to somebody else and to pick something else out. The volunteers at that site were Shannon and Tink Santos, Jean Storton, and Linda Dominguez. They helped Dee that day.
You know me, when there's a mic, I have to use it. But I would also like to thank, I call them the Blue Crew, but it's the Public Works guys. Year after year, they have come by, dropped the tables, picked them up, and they're always forgotten. And I just want to make sure that I let them know that I sure appreciate them. And also, I would really like to thank Nora. Year after year, here's another one that works so hard. And so from our plant exchange, I recycled some plants. And instead of giving them to my colleagues in the back, I thought I would give this to Nora.
Aww. Yay.
Oh, that's darling.
Thank you. So well deserved.
That's really
cute. Thank you all.
Let me just say that to all that we're acknowledging, I know there were others, and so we really appreciate you putting your best foot forward, because it's your work, when you make your properties, whether it's a residence or whether it's a business, look immaculate, the city looks good. So thank you for your time, your effort, and your commitment to the community. So we're going to move on to our next item on the agenda. This is item number 2. This is a proclamation honoring Grover Beach resident Jason Bonds for military service in the United States Army. And I felt that I would have the mayor pro tem, who is a former Marine, present this proclamation to Jason.
Jason, would you come up, please? Okay, City of Grover Beach, California, proclamation of appreciation from the city presented to Jason Bonds. Whereas the freedom and security that the citizens of the United States enjoy today are direct results of the sacrifices and continued vigilance of the United States Armed Forces over the history of our great nation. And whereas members of the United States military exemplify the values of civic duty, honor, courage, compassion, and dedication, with military personnel standing on point around the world, performing the role of peacekeeper, providing humanitarian service, and standing ready to fight as needed. And whereas our Army will continue as America's guardian of democracy and protector of freedom. And whereas America's soldiers are the best in the world, continuing to put duty, honor, and country first, voluntarily foregoing comfort and wealth, facing hardship and sacrifice, confronting danger, and sometimes dying in defense of our great nation. And whereas the Grover Beach City Council desires to publicly honor Jason Bonds, a Grover Beach resident who was recently discharged from the Army due to injuries sustained during his last tour of duty.
Thank you, everybody. I'm proud to come home. And just as you all go home tonight, keep in your prayers 4th Brigade, 4th Infantry Division, who are now serving in Afghanistan on their second tour. I was with them on the first tour. And just please keep in their prayers if they have lost 2 soldiers thus far this deployment. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Okay. Moving on, let's move into our next item on the agenda. This is public communication. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item within the jurisdiction of this council. Please bear in mind that the council cannot take action on any item that is not on the agenda. So if you want to speak during public communications, please make sure that it is not an item on our agenda tonight, because when we get to that item on the agenda, I will give you ample time to make comment then. So is there anyone that would like to address the council during public communications this evening?
Mayor and Council, my name is Brad Snook. I'm the chair of our county's chapter of the Surfrider Foundation. I want to thank everybody, for taking my comments tonight, and certainly puts things in perspective when we have people fighting in Afghanistan. A couple weeks ago, I had the honor of attending a water recycling forum that was hosted by the South County Sanitation District. The honor was that I was able to sit on the panel and offer some of the perspectives of a Surfrider as they pertain to water recycling and the potential for water recycling in our county. Since then, I've been in contact with Mayor Ferrara, and looks like we're going to be able to get a stakeholder board together, and has offered us opportunity to be on as charter members and a stakeholders group, and certainly would like to take the sanitation district up on that offer. We have about 4 million gallons per day that goes through our outfall pipe that could potentially be recycled. That's about 12 acre feet per day. About 2.8 million gallons of that comes from our South County Sanitation District, and the remainder comes from Pismo Beach. As you probably know, some of that Pismo Beach water will be used to do some development up in Price Canyon, or is planned to. And then also we have potential to use some of the water from South County, various needs around this part of either the sanitation district itself or potentially moving it up the Mesa and help out with the Napomo water shortage up there. And effectively utilizing Napomo as a customer. So what we're throwing away now, we potentially could sell elsewhere. Also want to reduce our need for a state water project resources. You essentially tie your hands to a certain cost and an inefficient system in state water. It's the first user of energy in the state, first single user of energy in the state. And San Diego is actually looking at recycling 100 million gallons a day of water that they move through their Point Loma plant that will be outdated and is now working on a waiver from the water board. And eventually that will be moved to a higher level of treatment, but they want to move the load off of it, and so they're going to recycle to move the load off of their wastewater treatment plant. If you read the article in the paper over the weekend, it had to do with the charge on the December 2010 sewage spill from our sanitation district wastewater treatment plant. And you'll notice that that they mention potentially bringing litigation against the water board, depending on
California. One is a general law city, and the other is a charter city. As noted in previous reports, the general law city derives its ability to operate primarily by the state constitution. In essence, the state constitution and its bodies of laws essentially becomes the municipal constitution. The charter, however, is a bit different in that a charter, when enacted by the local voters, becomes the municipality's constitution. A charter gives the city greater control over items which are considered to be municipal affairs and should be less of a concern of the state. These are mostly local affairs, and these include elections, municipal officers, city contracting and bidding procedures, and local land use and zoning issues. They differ from areas of statewide concern, which the state continues to govern in, and these matters of statewide concern will include the vehicle regulation, the Brown Act, and regulations governing state highways, to give a few examples. Today, a city has the opportunity to essentially develop a charter and choose from those municipal affairs over which it wishes to have more control. It is a statement of independence, if you will, from the state government itself, and has the tendency to build in a bit of a firewall or protection from state legislation. On May 14th, at the direction of the council, staff prepared a draft charter for the council to review. Council also took public testimony at that time relative to the charter. As a result, the council gave specific direction for staff to revise the charter in three areas. One is elected officials, the second is dealing with public works contracts, and the third is general plan and zoning consistency. In terms of elected officials, one of the directions that council provided was to draft language that would enable the council to place an item in the charter that would at least require residency, a six-month minimum requirement for residency before someone chooses to run for office. The other area relative to elections that the council had directed some additional research be done was relative to term limits, and at this point I'd like the city attorney to review that information since he was chiefly responsible for developing what you see in your report.
Thank you, Bob. Honorable Mayor, council members, at the last meeting, at the last meeting dealing with this issue, concluded that since the term limits were contained in the Grover Beach Municipal Code, they were basically subject to your change through an ordinance amendment. I was incorrect in that. The term limits were instituted through the vote of the people in 1996, and therefore any change to those term limits would also need to be put before the voters. Also, as you'll recall, when the voters decided to have a position of an elected mayor, I believe in 2006, at that point in time, also the length of the term, two-year versus four-year, was put before the voters, and two-year term was decided. So either one of those items, should you decide to wish to see if a change can be made to that, can be included in the language of the charter. And if it is your desire to do that, voters then can decide whether or not they want to, by adopting charter, make changes to either one of those, either the term limit issue itself or the length of the term of the mayor. Once, if and when charter is approved by the voters, then the code will be amended to remove that language from the actual municipal code, because it would then only be contained in the actual charter. Obviously, any change in the future to those would again need to be done through an amendment to the charter, which would require a vote of the people. With that, I'll gladly answer any questions.
Did you have anything else, City Manager?
Yes, there are a couple of other areas that I would like to cover. First of all, purchasing and public works contract. There was alternative language that was presented by staff, section 301, and the council directed that the alternative language be, just so you know, would require a third public hearing, which would occur in mid-July. If the council wished to proceed. At that point, you would then have to be in a position of making a final decision on whether or not to put this matter before the voters. Ultimately, it would be the voters that decide whether the charter is in essence enacted. Some of the advantages for further consideration of the charter by the city. Again, as I've mentioned, the city has greater municipal affairs. We've seen over and again the acts of the state that have ended up costing the city dearly. One of those, there is in fact proposed legislation right now in the state that essentially, if passed, would take city sales tax and property tax in order to offset any Department of Finance determinations of unmet obligations as a result of the previous agency. Just to give you an example, now this is not necessarily going to be a panacea, and I don't mean to lead anybody into thinking it does, but it certainly would provide more protection than we currently have in terms of the form of government language. There are other areas that the council needs to be concerned about. As mentioned before, there is The prevailing wage issue is currently contained in the draft, and it would allow the city to exempt local projects from a prevailing wage. As you know, that there's currently a case pending before the Supreme Court, the Vista case. Its decision is expected probably in early July, but that case could eliminate charter cities' ability to exempt local projects from prevailing wage. Just to give you some additional food for thought. Staff has also presented additional information, and that's attached to your report regarding prevailing wage and actually the section on volunteer regulation. So the council has the alternatives to consider. Again, this is a public hearing, so you're going to want to take public testimony, review the changes currently in the draft, and provide additional direction to the staff regarding potential additional revisions or whether or not the council wants to move forward with the item. Essentially, the council has both of those alternatives to consider, and I would recommend that the council consider public testimony and then provide direction as necessary. That concludes my report.
Great. Thank you, staff. And I just asked the audience, it's really hard for the council members to hear when folks are talking, so if you could refrain, that would be very helpful to us. So the city attorney and city manager have provided information. Let's see if there's some questions. Let me start to my right. Councilmember Wright, do you have any questions?
I may. I'll just, at this point, I don't. Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem?
I have none right now.
Councilmember Peterson?
I have two or three. When you talked about, or I don't know if you did actually talk about some of the savings that might be made if we had the option of not doing the prevailing wage. And you gave those in the staff report. There were two other projects before the city that could make a huge difference to our income over the year and years and how much we would have available to apply to streets. And one of them was perhaps doing a bond for streets, and I know that's been one of the things we've looked at. Can you give some ballpark indication of what we might save if we...
Well, again, these are based on estimates derived from anecdotal situation received from other cities, but you would be able to save somewhere between 10 and 15%. So obviously, if you did a $10 million bond issue, you could save somewhere between $1 million to $1.5 million, which are dollars that could then do more streets.
Okay, and then also if we were to move forward with the conference center, which it looks like could cost between $5 and $6 million, what would be the savings there? I guess would then be $500,000 to $600,000, roughly.
That's for the public projects
for
portion.
For the public projects, and those funds could be come back into the general fund sooner then.
Right, and all of that ultimate savings will depend on vary from project state law. Over actually $5,000 is subject to some sort of bidding procedure. Because it's defined as a state public works project. This section, I want to be very clear, doesn't deal with prevailing wage. What this would do is allow the city to set different procedures and processes for the purchasing or the contracting of projects. So let me give you, and with that example, you could raise that level, whether that be $10,000 to $20,000, and maybe you would consider up to $20,000 some sort of an informal bidding procedure or something of that nature. It just opens up that kind of flexibility. Oftentimes with public projects, time ends up being money, so if you can get it out to bid sooner, you can actually in some way save costs. So that's just a concrete example of how that might work.
Well, I don't see a threshold on here. When you talked about setting the limits?
No. What would happen is that this allows the council to set its own limits. What would happen is this is the empowering legislation. Then the staff would come back with a recommended purchasing policy or procedure, and then the council would enact that by ordinance.
All right, thank you. And then also, you had mentioned about the problems with the state taking our tax money. Section 400, though, talks about revenues raised and collected by the city. So what you were referring to, we don't collect our own sales tax. We don't collect our own property taxes. So what taxes are we referring to here that we would be able to protect?
TOT would be one that comes to mind. Local sales tax, even though that's collected by the city, it's collected more or less with an arrangement between ourselves and the state, but that would be one that would be subject to protection. Documentary transfer tax would be another one that would be subject. Depending on what you do with the business tax certificate in that legislation, those dollars would also be protected. Today, I think the threats to municipalities because of the economy and the state of the state's budget, you know, this just gives you an additional piece of protection.
So right now, none of those local taxes have been taken?
That's correct.
Okay. And then when it talks about mandates limited, could this be used in terms of, you know, we've been told that we need to do some work having to do with our storm drains? Would this be something
yes.
that would refer to that?
Yes.
That we could say that since we're not receiving any financial help from the state, then we shouldn't have to participate?
Sure. And then, you know, the argument will ensue from there. At least this gives you a level of protection. Ultimately, in cases like these, a court will determine whether or not it ends up being a statewide affair or not. And that's the line that ends up making the determination.
Okay. So then my concern is with all of these items that will protect us, if there is a problem with the state, then that will force us into litigation, and then that will cause us to have to pay for legal services above and beyond what we're normally doing.
Ultimately, that's always the council's decision. It just gives you one more thing to weigh.
I see. And then under Section 600, I'm a little concerned about the language here. It says the language of this charter is intended to be permissive rather than exclusive or limiting, and shall be liberally and broadly construed in favor of the exercise by the city of its power to govern with respect to any matter that is a municipal affair. I find that to be extremely troubling because, you know, depending upon who sits upon this council, that is something that can be horribly misused, that particular section right there. And I'm a bit concerned about that.
Maybe
the city attorney.
Thank you, Mayor. Maybe I can ease your mind a little bit. This section simply deals with interpretation of the language of the charter. And basically what it means is that if there is a question as to whether or not the municipal power was reserved by this charter to the city, the answer is yes. In other words, if there's a vagueness or it is... A form of draftsmanship. It's a form. You use this method to make sure that the intent of what you're doing is applied throughout the entire document and in anything that it deals with. So it is always interpreted in favor of the city retaining its power as for municipal affairs.
All right, thank you. And then one last.
Been part of this discussion that basically this is not recommending that any projects that are funded using or that are done using state and federal funds would be exempt from prevailing wage. Can you maybe just clarify?
All projects that are considered a statewide concern, and those would involve state-funded and federally funded projects, will still be done with prevailing wage. Just to give you an example, in the recommended capital improvement plan this year, there's slightly more than $3 million worth of projects. The vast majority of those are state or federally assisted, so you would be paying prevailing wage rate whether this moved forward or not. Approximately 18% are currently locally funded projects.
And so the state and local obviously is 82% of
right.
What, and has that been the historic trend for the city?
Generally, but it'll fluctuate depending on the amount of grant and local and grant and state and federal assistance we receive.
Okay, very good.
So I have a question then on that prevailing wage on the attachment 4.
Okay.
When you gave this example of the rehabilitation of Atlantic City and mm-hmm. then South 4th Street, mm-hmm. did either of those projects include grant money?
That's why I used them, was because it was all locally funded.
That was locally funded. All right, thank you.
Okay. There are no more questions from the council at this time. This is a public hearing. Let me open this up to the public. And I've got, looks like, 5 speaker request forms. And we're going to give everyone 3 minutes, and I would just ask that the audience be very courteous to the speaker and to the council as well. We know that this is for some folks, going to be very emotional, and so we want to do the best job we can. So that said, I have a speaker request form from Steve Weiner, followed by John Conway.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members, and staff. My name is Steve Weiner. I'm the Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Tri-Counties Building and Construction Trades Council. I represent construction workers that will be working on your public works projects. I handed the city clerk a couple of handouts. One is prevailing wage opponents fail to look at the research, and it talks about how to save that 20% that everybody talks about on public projects. And the other one is an article about a company called Turnkey School Construction, and I'll go into that a little bit later, but I hope that you look at both of those. Okay, in this report that I handed out, in order to achieve a 20% savings on construction projects, wages would have to fall by 70%. Labor costs are around 20 to 24% of the total cost of a project. With a 20% savings, a worker with a prevailing wage of $36.30 an hour would have to be paid $10.89 an hour to lower the cost by 20%. If labor cost equals 21% of the project, as on road and bridge works, wages would have to fall by over 80% to lower the total cost to 20%. And in this case, if a worker was making $34.76 an hour, they would have to be paid $6.95 an hour to save that 20%. So I hope that you please review that report, and I'd be happy to get you any more reports and any reports that you would like. Another thing is, out of 120 charter cities in California, nearly 60% of them have simply adopted state prevailing wage laws. Another 10% made minor adjustments, and the remaining 30% of the cities, none of them can conclusively demonstrate savings in eliminating prevailing wage rates. Doing away with prevailing wage does not increase local contractors on the project. In fact, studies show it decreases the local contractors. Overruns and delay increase on projects. And it does away with using apprentices on projects, which is training the workforce of the future. Most of our locals, the unions, the apprenticeship programs are over 8,000 hours of on-the-job training and classroom training. And state law right now requires that 20% of all hours on prevailing wage projects will be from state-certified apprenticeship programs. Doing away with the prevailing wage will do away with that section. And just down the road here in Santa Maria, a company named Turnkey Schools was awarded a contract from Santa Maria Bonita School District back in 2000, and it went from 2000 to 2005 for modular buildings. They did it by skirting public contract code and not paying prevailing wage on prefabbing the modulars in the factories. The building trades met with the school district before the project started, raising our concerns, and were told by the school district that our concerns were unwarranted. As the project went forward, we investigated the project and found poor workmanship. Some examples are conduits not being reamed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members and staff, and all the attendees here tonight. My name is Jim Conway. I'm with the Statewide Construction Industry Coalition. As Steve has just pointed out, the prevailing wage supports and protects local communities, protects local living wages, supports quality in contracting and workmanship, and maybe most importantly, supports apprenticeship through the state requirements for apprenticeship of 1 hour worked in apprenticeship for every 5 hours worked by journeyman on a state-funded project or a state-run project through the apprenticeship programs. The city manager has mentioned a case that's pending on the city of Vista. Again, it would appear that this any action prior to that is probably a little foolhardy at this point. I guess it won't happen before then. But in any case, also the exemption for volunteer work runs through 2017. It appears that there's a lot of problems here, or a lot of solutions in search of problems in the charter as it stands now. We're very concerned to hear the most recent edition of the exemption of public contract code. Just to read a brief excerpt from the contract code, it's to achieve the following objectives: to clarify the law with respect to competitive bidding requirements, to ensure full compliance with competitive bidding statutes as a means of protecting the public from misuse of public funds, to provide all qualified bidders with a fair opportunity to enter the bidding process, thereby stimulating competition in a manner conducive to sound fiscal practices, and to eliminate favoritism, fraud, and corruption in the awarding of public contracts. Now, I'm not sure why you want to get rid of statutes that have those as objectives. You will negatively impact what happens with the competition if you do away with protections for competition within the city. It's a very troubling set of circumstances that you're undertaking here. As you may know, the city of Royal Grande will probably put off consideration of its charter. They just had a meeting last week, and it looks like they'll probably postpone and won't go to the voters in November. We would encourage you to take their lead and to look at this and look at the overall objectives, look at the overall savings, which we believe are absolutely minuscule when it comes to prevailing wage elimination, and to think about this very carefully before you move forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. Lisa Curtis, followed by David Baldwin.
Hi. I'm Lisa Curtis, and I'm a full-time tenured faculty member at Cuesta College. And I want to speak to this issue from an educational standpoint. I myself have a master's degree in education, but I'm one of only two members of a huge family that ever went to college or got a degree. The rest of my family were all in the trades, and so I come from a long tradition of being very concerned about working class people, and that's most of us, after all. Very few of us are in that 1% or even in that 20%. I teach and advise in the basic skills series at Cuesta, and that series is comprised of courses that are for students who enter college unprepared for college-level courses. They need to improve and enhance their skills in reading, writing, and math. So I teach in that series. And I advise students who are in that series. And many of my students go from that series into the trade programs that Cuesta offers. The classes that we teach can prepare them for advancement through transfer to university, through an AA degree at Cuesta or an AS degree there, or they can proceed into a licensing or certification program in the trades. And I'm always so happy when I talk to them because of my own background, and I'm so happy that they're pleased to enter a field that would offer them protection in terms of wages, benefits, and working conditions. And I always talk to them about staying local, and I always encourage them to contact the unions locally and get into an apprenticeship program if they can. So when I heard about the possibility that this city might undermine the very foundation of our working class by doing away with prevailing wage, by doing away with the protection of those wages, benefits, and working conditions, and especially the apprenticeship program, as an educator, I was really concerned. Because my thought is, if that were to happen, and especially if that were to transfer to other cities in the county, and I've heard that Aurora Grande might consider the same, what would I tell my students? Well, the only thing I could tell them, instead of settle here, raise your families here, you're going to be able to support your families safely and effectively because of the skilled craftsman you're going to become. I would have to tell them, leave. You're not going to be able to make a living here. Now, I know state projects are mandated for prevailing wage, and so when I heard about these attempts to undermine it, I felt compelled to talk to you from the standpoint of an educator who's working directly with people from the trades coming out of Cuesta, wanting to go into apprenticeship programs, wanting to stay here and raise their families and contribute economically. And so I really hope this council would change its mind before that die is cast. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. David Baldwin, followed by Alex Landsberg.
Yeah, David Baldwin, Cement Masons Local Union. Mr. Mayor and members of the council, thank you. I'm going to limit some of my comments because some of the other speakers kind of touched on some things I was going to go over. But, you know, I do want to reiterate that the state saw fit to initiate prevailing wage conditions, you know, basically for the two reasons: that to be sure that skilled craft are paid the prevailing rate in the classifications in which they work, and to prevent out-of-town employers from coming in and undercutting local employers and workers. As was said before, I mean, local workers are already struggling, you know, across the country. We know how this economy's been. It's no secret. And it's no secret that construction, particularly in this area in Santa Barbara County, has been hit particularly hard. I want to speak more directly, I think, to apprenticeship. In the Cement Masons program here, in, we train in San Luis Obispo for Santa Maria and San Luis County areas. We train our apprentices right here locally. We take them from various sources, or some of them come straight out of high school into our program. And we hire local people and train them to have a job where they can make a livable wage, where they can work their way into pensions and health care and all the things they need to survive here in the economy, but also to benefit the local economy by, you know, spending their money here. I was kind of struck by the guy that came in earlier. You know, we have a helmets to hard hats program, and we do take candidates from the military and bring them into our apprenticeship programs. We have a program called Helmets to Hard Hats, and we're very proud of that program. And that young man that was here earlier could very well end up in one of our programs. We'd certainly like to have him. Lastly, I just want to say that, you know, we're not opposed to the city moving towards charter. That's really not our issue. But we, like San Luis Obispo and like Santa Maria, we would just like to see prevailing wage and apprenticeship protected for the local people here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Alex, followed by Luis Robles.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, Council. My name is Alex Landsberg. I'm with Smart Cities Prevail. I was here last month when the topic of Tulare and the wastewater treatment plant was brought up. Now, there was I believe the staff report suggested that the city saved something on the order of 30% on its total cost in building that wastewater treatment plant. Unfortunately, I'm sorry to say that the story was inaccurate, to say the least. The upshot of it is that, in fact, the city of Tulare ditched the time-tested public contracting method that is used in Grover Beach right now and probably wasted around $230,000 to do so. Now, a complete explanation is impossible right now in the time limits. Excuse me, but I do have some handouts that I can share with you and other members in the audience here. But if anything, it's a cautionary tale of what happens when you ditch these time-tested methods, and it would be a disservice to Grover Beach as well as its residents to proceed in that direction. And frankly, Tulare was lucky compared to the city of Palo Alto. We also, Mr. Weiner, briefly talked about Palo Alto last month. Well, since then, that problem has gone from bad to worse. City Palo Alto's decision to undertake a complex building project with a bidding process that essentially encouraged the race to the bottom has now put the contract, put the project at least a year behind schedule. It's less than three quarters of the way done as of the beginning of the month. They've had to more than double their contingency. They are prepared to spend even more money suing the contractor for blowing just about every timeline that's been put out there. This is all because they decided to embrace what you guys are talking about embracing. There is some good news, though. First of all, the good news is that the charter that this one is modeled on in the city of Auburn went down 2-1. And the reason is people are smart enough not to buy some of this stuff. But more importantly, we've heard a lot about economic development and really the need to promote the local economy. Well, one thing that we want to...
What we do, we build your schools, we build your bridges, we build your water treatment plants, we build your channels, we build all of your infrastructure. And we take great pride in this. And the thing that becomes somewhat puzzling to me is the fact that earlier in this very meeting, we would hand somebody a certificate because of their want to make the city beautiful. But yet you would want to take something from somebody who wants to make everything, our lives, beautiful. The way you drive to work better. The way you your water is cleansed better. And that just seems puzzling to me because, you know what, we take great pride in what we do. We have apprentices. Matter of fact, there is a young apprentice in the room right now. Actually, two of them. One of them is my cousin, my young cousin. And I'm asking, I'm letting you guys know that, you know what, we chose this profession. We didn't end up here. It wasn't because of any sort of economical stress or economical duress that we chose this because my father was an iron worker. I'm an iron worker. My cousins are an iron worker. My son and my cousin's sons are now iron workers. And we do this because we want to build for you. We want to say we can do this. We can do it better. We can do it right. We're trained. We've been through the apprenticeship program. We're skilled craftsmen. And just as if you were to buy furniture, you get what you pay for. So I just wanted to say thank you for this opportunity to come up and speak on this. Understand that we are people passionate about what we do. Sometimes I stay up late thinking about how I'm going to build the wall the next morning. Right now, I work at Diablo Canyon. I have three cousins in here right now that are working on the Santa Maria Bridge. And I have one cousin in here right now that was working on your solar plant. So we're here to work for you. And I just wanted that to be heard. Thank you.
Thank you, Lewis. Appreciate those comments. I don't have any other speaker requests formed, but I'll see if there's anyone else that would like to address the council on this item.
Good evening, Liz White, North Gover Beach. In reviewing all the documentation regarding a general law city versus the charter city concept put before this council, as a citizen that has found it completely perplexing as to how and why the city operates the way it does, I believe it would be disastrous to even put this issue on the ballot. The charter city concept assumes numerous factors. Of the most important is ethical and moral leadership from the mayor on down. Another most important and vital factor is how and why our current laws, rules, ordinances, and guidelines are applied, enforced, and maintained, especially within the building and planning department. For myself personally, I find that the city cannot, does not, and will not enforce its laws equitably, fairly, and for the betterment of this community as a whole. Myself and many, many other citizens have come before you for help on many different issues, including but not limited to parking problems, congestion issues, mail and garbage delivery, suspicious drug activity, unsightly of property, on, only to find that all is not on the up and up as would be expected of a city with much responsibility. Your good citizens have left these council chambers feeling completely ignored, demonized, discriminated against, and treated as second-class citizens as compared to those that are part of the still in existence good old boys group that has a stranglehold on this Shoals council majority and therefore can have no hope for fair and equitable representation. It is well known that it is who you know, not what the laws are, as to enforcement of the Grover Beach Municipal Code, as was revealed by the Mandalay Marbrisa home remodel in an existing, established, and completed HOA, completely unprecedented and very, very snarky in the way in which it was accomplished. That's why this council majority wants to get rid of the already in place general law city so that not one of your citizens will have the power or the voice to question what is done and made law behind closed doors. Even many new persons to this community, when dealing with City of Grover Beach and the different departments, have labeled Grover Beach as the City of Belle by the Sea. Another perfect example, as was stated by Mayor Scholes at one of the last council meetings, quote, "I've talked with my friends and they say the streets are just fine," unquote. Well, that certainly flies in the face of what we do know, that our streets have been overlooked and put aside for decades in favor of unrealized specific plans and thousands of dollars to consultants. In a recent CNN news article, it was stated that 80% of revenue in any city is derived from small businesses. So what we as a community need to do is support our local businesses, pay prevailing wages, take care of our citizens by listening to them, and fixing our streets and keeping infrastructure up so that good people will want to stay and visit our little town.
Anyway, it's a great program. It's for a lot of kids who don't want to go on to college but need a trade of sorts. So it's wonderful to see, and it's nice to know that these kids can go, they even compete, like an Olympics, that they go back to Kansas to compete in their trades. They build, they do the electrical work, the plumbing. All of this is done by these young students, so that way they can have a career. And for them to go ahead and go through college by having some kind of trade to fall back on. And as we all know, it's not always when you get out in the real world that you fall back, that you really want to go to college and do what you thought you were going to do. You fall back on your trades. I was fortunate from a very young age. I wanted to be a hairdresser, and still today I love the profession. So I understand how these people feel. We deserve all the money we can make and support our families. It's fun being in a trade that you enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you, Dee. Yes, please come forward, state your name, city residence for the record.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Walt French, 1042 Atlantic City, Grover Beach. Mayor, council members, and city employees, I want to thank you for your service to the city. We've had a wide range of speakers tonight, and I just want to clarify that I am absolutely gratified that you guys are taking this serious. I want to thank you for that. One thing in common with most of the speakers tonight is a feeling that there is a threat of problems with apprenticeships and things like that being threatened. And it's absolutely true that if the wages are reduced, then people all of a sudden can't afford to live here. You know, this is an expensive town compared to places in Texas and Louisiana and places like that, and we need a good living wage, a good stand to uphold a good standard of living, and that's important. I think, I've been in the Plumbers and Pipe Fitters Union now for 35 years. I've been a resident of Grover Beach for about 40 years, and I've grown to know that there's a certain amount of money that needs to be made to provide for a family, to have health care, to do things like that. And through the apprenticeships and through training that all the different trades have, it's important that those wages are upheld so we would have something for people to want to come in, you know, to come into the trades. Now, as far as Jason goes, the vet that was just here, if possible, I'd like to get his phone number and invite him to participate in our union, to come in and file an application. We have an expedited program for veterans. It's called Veterans in Piping, or VIP. We train them how to do projects in plumbing, pipe fitting, welding, things like that. We also have a program that other trades have called Helmets to Hard Hats. So we're serious about taking care of the people that take care of us. And I would like to personally invite Jason to, or I'd like to talk with him. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Walt. Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close this to the public, bring it back to the council. So let's have some discussion. Let's start with Councilmember Peterson.
Well, I really appreciate people coming forward and expressing their views, and I'd like to, I guess I'm, one of my concerns is that we keep things in perspective, and we are talking about, I believe, the Charter City is not about just prevailing wages, it's about us being able to make choices at a local level, and we have suffered tremendously by being dictated to by the state, and so I would like to see us make a stand for being able to keep management local, management of our own local affairs local. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we won't use prevailing wages on local projects. It means that we have the option of deciding for ourselves what we'll do, not being dictated to. And I wanted to clarify again with staff, and I think Mayor Scholes asked the question, is it correct that 18%, roughly 18% of the projects that we do not have a state or a federal component?
Currently, that yes, that's correct.
So worst case scenario would be that 82% of our projects would be prevailing wage projects,
right,
and 18% would be projects where we have the option of using prevailing wage, include that in this, and further complicate it. Those are my current thoughts, depending on, of course, the conversations we have up here between council members.
Okay. Councilmember Molnar.
All right, thank you. Well, Councilman Peterson, I really like to thank you for bringing up the election issue. I actually think it does not belong in this charter at all at this time, so I agree with you there. Though I do have some questions still concerning the purchasing and public works contract section. After listening to a lot of these speakers, I wonder, will we still go with the lowest bidder?
Ultimately, I think that's a council decision.
Okay, that's interesting. Because I wonder if when most contractors or construction companies come forward, when they put in their bid, they already know what their payroll is going to be for that particular project, and they have their cost estimates and how much they want to make. My concern is if you bring in outside contractors who are going to bid really low, and you wonder where it is that they're going to cut the corner so they can still make their percentage of profit that they require in order to continue in business. And it makes me worry that if we have this prevailing wage section in here, that we will then attract contractors who are going to not really give us quality work, no matter whether they're paying a good salary or not. That is a big fear that we really should think about. Not just the prevailing wage issue, but the quality of the companies that will be coming in and giving their bids. Okay? That is what, if we leave this prevailing wage section in here, that is something that could happen also. As a person who has actually taken a couple of classes at both Cuesta and Allen Hancock, I have taken residential wiring, and I have taken welding. And I really enjoyed both. And it made me thoroughly appreciate somebody who is properly educated in their skill. Okay, and just think about it. Wiring is a very, very important thing that you have done on your project. Mm-hmm. And if you bring in somebody who is not qualified to do that job, you have a big problem. Plumbing, same thing. You could have leakages. You can have things that are happening internally in walls that you do not know are occurring because somebody has come in and used shoddy workmanship. Now, most people, when they want something done, they go to an expert, somebody who is educated. For example, our city attorney here, would we have somebody sitting in his position who was not properly educated? No, we would not. I think that's something that we need to think about. It is very, very foolish to leave Section 302 in this charter. There are very good reasons why we should take it out. And I, for one, will not support a charter that has this. My second concern is that we have not gotten enough stakeholder participation, and I'm talking about the residents. Most charters, when they are done, they have town hall meetings. They have people come in and give their input about how they want their city to be run. We have chosen not to go that route, and that is a very big mistake. Because in the end, I don't think we will have a product to offer our residents that's actually going to pass on a ballot. Okay, and so what are we going to spend? How much is it going to cost us, city manager, please, to put this on the ballot? Not talking about staff, what staff has cost, but how much is it going to cost us to put it on the ballot?
Somewhere between $7,000 and $10,000.
Okay, well, you know what? We just laid off, or we're in the process of laying off, 6 people, 2 full-time, 4 part-time. For the cost of that, we might have been able to keep maybe a part-time person. I think this is a foolish use of money. And I really want the others to listen seriously to this. You know, we're pushing something much too quickly. And the purpose was what? To save money. Well, the only thing that we're being shown here that's going to save money is the prevailing wage issue, which is listening to all of these people is being shot down. And, you know, and I took account. We had 9 speakers. There was not one person who came up here in support of this charter. Not one person. Forget the prevailing wage issue and all of that. Nobody came up and said, we're really glad you're doing this. That, to me, is an indication. Maybe it is only, 9 people, but gosh darn, I didn't hear anybody say, this is really great for our city. That, to me, is an indication of where we are going here and why we should not be doing this. So I really want the rest of you to think about this seriously.
To me, it's about the actual protection of the little bit of money that we are able to bring in and try to hang on to it. I have seen it. It's taken away little by little by little by little by this, the state, the county, whatever. Anything that we can do to try and hang on to some of these funds that we so desperately need, I think is important. And regarding the, I don't even want to talk about the construction part of this because that is what I do. I make sure that the organization I work for, that the folks do what they're supposed to do. And there are many ways to do that. And as far as the charter, this charter, we could become part of the Uniform Accounting Procedures Act, and our public works projects, we could take them to bid at $175,000 if we wanted to, but our city hasn't done that. I'm not quite sure why we haven't, but we haven't. So the fact that we're at a $5,000 threshold at this point in time, we could change that at any time without becoming a charter city. So all of that to say, I would really like to hear from other people in the city, those who have maybe don't have a stake in it as part of a prevailing wage issue, because it is very important. I think that folks understand that this charter is not going to give us all these powers that I'm not quite sure what these powers are going to be, but I think that that's just very misleading. And so we do need to educate folks as to what this is going to mean. If it means we're going to have unlimited power where we can take over the city, well, of course, that would be ridiculous, and no one would want to do that. But if that's the case, people need to know that. Regarding term limits, I don't want to touch it. It doesn't matter to me. Obviously, I think our citizens have already spoken once. I don't think we need to keep rehashing the issue. So as far as I'm concerned, at this point in time, I'd like to see, I would support this going forward with additional input from the people who live in this town, the people who we're supposed to represent.
Well said. Mayor Pro Tem.
I support becoming a charter city. I think it's our responsibility to regulate this city to the best of our ability, and I do not think we should continue to be under the thumb of the state of California. A lot of the regulations that come down from the state of California are put together based on the average of all of the communities within the state. They don't look at Grover Beach as an individual community and say, well, your community can do this or can't do that or should do this or shouldn't do that. They don't look at it that way. It's one shoe fits all or one size fits all. We have, I forget how many cities within the state of California, and they all come under, those that are general law cities, all come under the same rules and regulations. And I don't think that's right. I think we, in this community here, and the people that are elected to run this community, should be the people that run the community and set the policy. We set the policy. We have a staff that executes it. I think that's the way this community should be run. There are, I believe, they came up with 180 or 120 cities that are charter cities within the state of California, and that's how they operate. And I think we should be in that same position. As to the prevailing wage issue, again, that is a formula that's put together by the state, and again, they've taken into consideration the entire state. There are areas in this state that can afford a much higher labor cost than this community can. We are a small city. We don't have a lot of retail, so we don't have a lot of income. We have to be a little bit more concerned about what we can do, what we can afford to do, and when we can do it. If, in fact, we did not have to pay prevailing wage, that might very well give us the opportunity to accomplish a lot more within the city. By accomplishing a lot more, that gives us the opportunity to hire more people, or it gives us the opportunity for longer employment for those people that are working. There was one of the gentlemen that gave an example of cutting the labor rate from $36 to $10 an hour. That is not our intent under any circumstances. We would not, under any circumstances, as far as this council is concerned, I believe we would not take that approach at all. We would not allow that to happen. But what we can do is if we can reduce the labor cost on some of the large major projects, maybe in prevailing wage. Please, don't think that because we get the opportunity to not have to use prevailing wage that we're going to destroy a lot of jobs or we're not going to pay people or they're going to be paid such a low wage that they can't afford to live here or at $10 an hour they couldn't afford to live any place in the state of California, and that's not what our goal or our objective is. I would also like to comment on term limits. It's my belief that we should do away with term limits. The reason I feel that way, it was back in the 90s that they did away with term limits on the state level. Since then, the state of California has gone downhill. We are in a position now within the state legislature is having a horrible time. We do not have the money. We're cutting back on education, cutting back on so many projects. They're taking money away from the communities like Grover Beach. They've done away with the redevelopment agencies, which cost this community about $1 million. It's not working. I think the reason it's not working, the people that are elected on the state level, once they get up to Sacramento, obviously it takes them some time to learn how to do your job. Some people it takes longer than others. But in the meantime, who's running the state? I think the people that have been there working as clerks and administrators for the last 10, 12, 15, 20 years, they're the ones that are running the state, not the legislatures, because they're learning the job. Once they learn the job, then, whoops, wait a minute, I got to worry about running for re-election, and I've only got one more term to go. And once I finish that term, what am I going to do? Well, I need to find a job where I can make a lot of money, and I think with my political power, I think I can find one, either in the state or in the state capital or in one of the other communities working in government. So term limits, to me, make no sense. If you have people in office and they're not doing the job and you do not wish to have them stay in office, then you vote them out. It's that simple. And again, that is a decision that I think should be made by the people within the community, not by some law that says, regardless of how good of jobs you're doing, we don't want you here more than 2 years or 4 years or 8 years or whatever the term is. I think that's wrong. If you're doing a good job and the people like you and they want you to stay in there and continue to do the work that you're doing, then I think we should leave them in office. Let's do away with term limits and let the people make the decision as to whether or not you've served rightfully and done a good job and should stay in that position.
Thanks, everyone, for those comments. And I'm glad I get to go last because it gives me a chance to kind of settle down a little bit. And I had some comments I was going to make, some observations I was going to make, but I'm going to change up because there's been a lot of comments up here on this dais and out in the community, a lot of misinformation. And let me first just say that the city of Grover Beach has always been considered a blue-collar city. We have always tried to find ways to work with local workers. Anyone who's been following this council for years, when we talked about the project that we did on the West End of Grand, and the council said we want to find ways to hire local workers, local firms, and try and figure out how do we add them to give them additional points for being in our region, in our city, and we're told by state law that we could not do that. But let's be clear, this council has never said that this is a power grab. Any charter, any general law city or whatever has to go to a vote of the people. It's not this council that makes that final decision. We have always talked about locally funding projects, maintaining local control, finding ways to work with our local workers, and nothing's changed. Nothing's changed. The second thing is we've been talking about charter cities. We've been talking about the all-out assault on cities from this current, the governor and the legislature going back many years and trying to find ways to add protections. We've been trying to do that, and we felt this is one vehicle, the prevailing wage issue aside, to do that. Now, that said, anyone who has watched me on this council for 10 years knows that this is your community, and I know we got folks in the audience, we got folks at home watching. There are 13,000 people in this community. And so all we can do is try and find ways to protect your resources. And if that is not what the majority of this community wants, it's not a majority of this council wants, then we're not going to do that. So that said, the only thing that I'm going to say I agree with Councilman Ramona on is that we need to get more public input, and I think Karen, you said that too. So with that said, I think a charter city is a way to go, and I think that we just need to defer this action to be proactive and get public. A breaking point. I've been on this council for 10 years, and for people to imply that I am unethical, that we have done sweetheart deals for friends, you are way over the line. And for someone who was appointed by this very council to imply that we don't take our work seriously, you are way over the line. So that said, I trust that anyone who has watched me on this council for years knows that I have been fair and I've done the right thing for the right people when the time comes. And so I am not going to sit up here and take this anymore, whether you mean it or not. We all give time to this community, and some of us a lot longer than others. So I want to thank everyone for coming in here, giving us your input, giving us your comments, because that is the process. The fact is, we get information, and it's not until we have a public hearing that we hear from people in this community, people out in the business field, and then that helps us form a decision, and we'll continue to do that. But, you know, I think this issue of a charter, I think at this point, I'm of a position where let's defer this, let's get more public input, and let's see what the community has to say. Because sorry, folks, this is the first time you've seen me do this in 10 years, but I think everyone has a point. So with that, I'm going to see where the council wants to go with this.
if we move forward with this, we have a third public testimony session. And as you indicated, there are a lot of people that watch this. There are a lot of people in the community that talk about the city council sessions. I think they have had an opportunity to come forward and express their opinion, whether they like it or dislike it. So far, it's my understanding, based on what I've heard, that the only basic dissension we've had is from the labor unions and the prevailing wage aspect of the charter city. We had the Chamber of Commerce people here last week, or at the last meeting, and one other business person here that did support the charter city concept. So we do have another opportunity for the city to appear. As is so typical, when you have an issue before the city, quite frequently, almost always, you have a lot of people that are against whatever you're trying to accomplish that speak up. The people that are in favor of it very seldom show up. I think that's historically true on either the state or on the local, state, and federal level. I've seen that over the years. It continues to happen. So the fact that we don't have people here telling us, yes, we like it, no, we don't, other than the one area, doesn't to me mean that we don't have public input. This has been publicized consistently now for quite some time. If there were that many people against it, I think they would be here. I can only assume that those people that are not here, that do watch this program at home and do talk about it on the streets, that they certainly do not disagree with the action that we're taking. So are you ready for a motion or what? Or does it not? Does it take a motion? If so, we have an alternative here. We can decide to consider the public testimony, which we have listened to. We can review, recommend changes in the charter, provide direction to the staff on any additional revisions, and proceed to schedule a third public hearing for the meeting in July, July 16th. I would suggest that we move forward with it. That's my recommendation.
I'd like a little discussion on your recommendation.
Well, let's see if there's a second.
Yeah.
Is it a motion? Are we making a motion?
I am.
Okay.
I'm not sure that, do we need a motion on this, Council?
Well, that is up to the mayor. There is no resolution pending, but I think that establishing if there is a majority of you who wants to move this item forward, obviously either through motion or consensus or through some other format, would be wise.
Would you like that in the form of a motion, Mayor?
Well, let's see. Yeah. Well, let's make a motion and let's see if there's support for it. Let's do that.
Okay. And that is my motion, which is the recommendation of staff.
I'm going to second that motion because I would like to have. Okay, you know what I'd like to have.
Okay.
So I'm just going to second the motion. And
so you want to start with some discussion on the motion?
I don't have to listen to myself talk all the time. I think you understand. So my discussion is I'd like to give because I think that it can be a benefit to our city.
We're held and will be held if this move forward, are mandated by law. Whether or not it provides for a prolonged process for exactly the reasons that I think council outlined. Whether or not to have additional meetings, workshops, or any other public participation, that is entirely up to the council. But the process that staff has outlined and the council has embarked on is the process that's provided for under the law.
So that process would include one more meeting?
One more
and
public
that's
hearing.
It.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Excuse me.
Councilmember Warner.
Yes. The charter is a good idea. It does make a statement to the state, and if it does help to protect local taxes from being taken in the future, that's a good idea. The purchasing and public works contract section, I think, is a very good idea. I don't know why we can't consider moving this forward with the idea that we meet again. Why don't we have an option to push the charter forward for voting without the prevailing wage section. If we're looking at having something passed by our voters, I think this it would have a greater chance of it passing with that section removed. And I want everyone to seriously think about this next time we meet, because we've gone over it and we've decided that there will be many times when we will be able to do our projects and not have this be an issue. And if there's only a few small times when it doesn't, I think that this will fail if we leave the prevailing wage section in there. And I thought the whole purpose was to help out the city, you know, in its relationship with the state. You know, this is, we want to make a statement. We are going to be, you know, our own municipality and take care of our own municipal issues. So why have this thing fail because of that one section? So that's just my thought for everyone to think about now.
Okay. Well, here's why. I'm not going to support this motion. I think what we need to do is, if we're saying the charter is the way to go, clearly there are no obviously we have a deadline trying to get this on November, but clearly there are still questions and lingering concerns, so maybe it's better to keep it in the draft form, say we're not going to make the November election and get public input, and then try and craft it with input from the folks who live in this community.
Well, I don't think we should shoot the dog because it's got the wrong color spots or whatever. It's a bad analogy.
I never heard that one.
I just made it up, apparently, obviously.
Well, I guess the question I have is the motion, is that still targeting November? I mean, is there going to be, because I think we're already working in a short time frame. So, you know, if we said, hey, we're not aiming for November, but at a future date, maybe there's an opportunity to continue moving forward and get that public input.
And we may be at that in July, in the next meeting. That may be where we end up. But, I mean, we're moving forward somewhat. I'd kind of like to at least play it out and see where we land since we've come this far.
Okay.
I have a question. If we do move forward with this and we do have another public hearing in July, if there are any changes that we want to make, it can be made at that time?
Yes.
Before it goes on to the final?
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. With that idea in mind, that we do have time for public input between now and a month from now, in July, we can do whatever we want. We can get people in here that want to contact us, talk to us, see what we want to do, and come July we'll make a final decision and we can either stop it then or we can move forward.
Okay. I guess the question is, in your motion, are you saying moving forward with the draft as presented by staff?
Correct.
There's been a lot of discussion on some of the items in here tonight.
Correct. As presented tonight, the draft that we have.
What's that?
Without term limits.
Without term limits and with the prevailing wage issue still in this draft.
Yes.
So there's a second. Was that your intent?
Yes, that'll give people an opportunity to speak to those issues. And I don't care if the term limits are left in there at this point in time. I don't think that would... I don't think that in itself is, as I said, that important to me, but it may be to the people in the town. I don't know. I would
go.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No. With that item is concluded for now. We're going to take a 15-minute recess. Let's reconvene at 8:30.
Okay. Put it down here.
Ready? I'm going to reconvene the regular meeting. However, given the lateness of the hour, what I'd like to do or what I'm going to do is to recess the regular meeting, and then we'll pick up the budget. So I know that there are folks who are still here that are interested in the budget, and then maybe we can get some resolution on that, and then we'll see where everyone is and decide if we want to take the other items or continue them to another meeting date. Sound good, everyone?
Yes.
Good.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So yep. What are we going to continue then?
So basically, I think what we're looking at is we'll get through the budget. We'll see kind of where the council is as a whole. So then it looks like what we would need to consider is the CIP, the five-year CIP, the Northern Cities Management Area 2011 report.
Also, we'll continue to do those items.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, depending on how we, we'd have to consent as well.
Okay, well, that's an easy one.
Yeah, so basically, let's see if we can't get some resolution on the budget, and then we'll come back, and if everyone's up to it, we'll go consent, and then we will go through the rest of that agenda. Sound good?
Yes, please.
Okay. So I think when we last concluded, we had taken comments from members of the public on the budget. And so just if there's anyone else that still wanted to make any comments on the budget as proposed tonight. Okay, seeing none, bring it back. So let's have some questions or discussion on this item.
May I start?
Yes, I'm sorry. Councilmember Monar.
Unless you were somebody else wanted to start.
No, feel free. You have the floor.
Okay. A lot of the questions I had on the budget were answered, and I feel very comfortable with the budget. I guess the only issue then is what we're going to decide about the donations or grants that we give to the different organizations.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Good point.
All right. Our budget does not include those particular items?
That's correct.
Okay. Do we have a total of what everyone is requesting? Grant total here?
It's listed in the attachment.
That might help us.
7,500, 12,500, 19.
Was that it wasn't in your PowerPoint, was it?
No, yes, it was on page 7. And
there we go.
Right.
Okay. Again, and the power of technology.
And Mr. Mayor, if you will, just for clarification, the Chamber of Commerce has said $5,000 worth of cash and $2,500 in kind. And then slow visitors. Bureau has said that on the Save the Central Coast, that's actually 5,000.
It's 25,000 roughly.
And what about the housing trust? What did we do last year?
Last year, if I'm not mistaken, 5, it was 5 out of the redevelopment agency.
Okay.
Okay.
We didn't hear much anything for the Environmental Center, did we?
We did notify them, but they didn't show.
And we just basically have a letter, that's all?
Yes.
Is that an organization that has historically been requested funding?
That's new, isn't it?
Yes, that's...
Yeah, I haven't seen it before.
Okay.
I mean, I've seen the organization, but not in this context.
Okay. Phyllis, you have anything else you have?
No, I just wanted to have us clarify how much totally we're looking at here. And we're all adding it up, I'm sure.
We got staff here for you make a calculator?
19.
It's about 20,000.
Yeah, 19. Between 20 and 25,000.
Okay. Oh, adding in number 6 since we'd never done them before. I figured stay with the... Who we'd help?
Then the cash would be just under $20,000.
So then, what's your thoughts on that, Phyllis? So the chamber, the EVC, the VCB, Saver, and Housing Trust Fund, correct?
Right. It's just like we're not very well represented in that particular publication, and I'm concerned because I still did not get any figures of benefits we've received from Saver. And so that's my concern there. I do believe in the housing trust because I serve on that, and I've seen the benefits that it has done for the entire county and for our community. And they do use that money. They need it for, you know, their staff costs, because all their grant money and everything that they get, they cannot use for that. And they do serve a good purpose. So I would like to still support them. If we can't do five, if we could do three.
Okay.
So those are my comments.
Great. Oh, Councilmember Bright, do you have anything?
As far as the chamber is concerned, I agree. That benefits our local businesses and our local economic development overall. So I'd like to stick with that. The EBC, I agree. They are a great organization. I just don't know that $5,000 is something we can do at this time. I'd like to support them in some fashion, but I don't know if at that level at this time. We've been a big supporter of theirs for years. I think we had to reduce our last year. So I'm thinking maybe my suggestion would be probably to do the same thing. The Visitors and Conference Bureau, their TOT calculation seems fair to me. I'm not sure about SAVOR. I mean, it's a fun thing, but I don't know that I have seen the results. I mean, I don't expect you to come up with numbers, but I just don't know that at this point in time, $5,000 means a lot to us, and I just don't know that we would reap that benefit this year. Housing Trust Fund, well, I'm glad to hear that they're talking about doing something here in Grover Beach, because I don't think we've seen much activity here from the Housing Trust Fund, at least in my recollection. So I'd like to some kind of a, I don't know, about $3,000. I'm thinking more along the lines of maybe $1,000 there. And EcoSlow's not here, so I don't really hear their case. So what I'd really like to do is give as much as we can to our local businesses through the chamber request. And then same thing with EBC, because they have been they've been a good partner to us, I think. But I just don't know that at that level. So those are my suggestions.
Okay. Councilmember Peterson.
I agree with the Chamber of Commerce amount. They've come down a little bit on what their initial request was, and I really appreciate that. And so I think we should support that for all the reasons that have already been mentioned. The EVC, I agree, same thing. Visitors and Conference Bureau, we are, our TOT is the lowest of, I believe, any of the other cities that are participating. And they're all participating with the exception of Arroyo Grande, and I think they're participating through BID. So I think, you know, it's a very fair number, and based on, mm-hmm. on what we're really bringing in. And on the SAVOR, the Central Coast, the hard cost to them to, and what we're proposing this year is to do the train, which we did 2 years ago. And the point of doing the train is that we continue to bring home the fact that we've got this train station here. And I think that it's very much under-marketed, and I think it's going to be critical when we have the hotel. So I would really like to see us do the SAVOR the Central Coast at the $5,000, because they've agreed to find another sponsor, perhaps Amtrak, to work with us, more of a silent partner, but someone who'll bring in money and not take the not steal the limelight for us. They've agreed to find someone to do that, and to find someone to pay that extra $5,000, so that we can get it for five. And so it's quite a bargain. It's even a better bargain than we're getting from the chamber. The way they work it is, unless you are one of their members, or you're a member of one of their members, then you don't. We can't do SAVOR without our membership. So we can't do the five without the 4314. So I would still support that, and I think that they're becoming more and more and more Every year they become better at what they're doing, and they've got very sophisticated marketing, and I think that they're important. They're important to our city events. They publicize all of our city events.
$1,000 contribution there. The EVC, $5,000, yes. The Visitors and Conference Bureau, I have no problem with $5,000 there. Save the Central Coast, I have a tendency to look more to the future, and I think in the long run it's really going to pay off. So I'm not adverse to the 10, but if you want to bring it down to 5, fine. That saves us money there. I'm happy with that. On the Housing Trust Fund, we have had that one project that they've gotten involved in. That's a very viable organization. They're doing a great job. I think we could miss that for a year, and it would not hurt us. There just aren't that many projects in this area that they support. They're willing to support them, but there's nobody coming forth with projects other than the one we had and the one we have in the mill right now. I appreciate that. On the Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo County, that is a new organization. I think it's incumbent upon them to show up here, which they failed to do. So I think we should notify them that they'll be reconsidered next year.
Okay. So I agree with majority of the comments, and I will say that I do have some reservations regarding SAVOR, the Central Coast. But I will, you know, Debbie, you've been our community rep, and you're saying you see real value in that. I think I can go along with that, but I do believe that with any of these organizations, we need to have them start tracking specific improvements and things they're doing for this community, so that Councilman Ramonar, when she's asking for that kind of information, that it is available. So I think that is something we definitely want to do, because, you know, I agree. The Stone Soup is in the heart of our community. We're hoping that it's growing bigger and it'll be better, but we certainly want the chamber to give us reports, and I think we're going to have to really start demanding on these reports be made with regularity. So I agree with that, and so I agree with everyone's comment as far as the Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo. If they're not here to make their case, then it's really not something we can take action on. And so I think I'm on board with where the majority of us are going on this. The other thing I did want to bring up to everyone, just to make sure that we're in agreement, because I know that when staff talked about the general fund and making up the shortfall, the $319,394, that staff identified three potential ways to do that. One was the extension of the employee concessions at 285, the reduction in contribution to the 5 Cities Fire Authority, and sell the city-owned property, estimated at 150. That there is, we're all in agreement with that. I hadn't heard much discussion on that, but I didn't want to just assume that is, in fact, what direction we want to give staff on this.
What happens if we have a problem with the negotiations with the 5 Cities Fire Authority?
Well,
so, Bob?
My suggestion is that it be approached this way. We won't know ultimately. As I've said, it's a combination of those three items, and you've got both the fire as well as the concessions with employees, and we won't know what that final bottom line is until those discussions are complete. What we would do is come back to the council when we know what those actual savings are, and then indicate that we either need to make some additional corrections, or we are where we are, where we need to be.
Can we fire them?
Who?
The 5 Cities Fire Authority. Can we fire them?
Ouch. You know the chief's in the audience, correct?
Well, if you don't mind, if your house burns down and no one comes.
Well, we're not going to go. We're not going.
I was
that
trying
extreme.
To lighten up the mood.
Yes.
Here.
Oh, I didn't get the. We all missed the pun. Nice. Take us a few. So I think obviously there's a consensus that those are the three areas targeted with the goal of eliminating that shortfall. So I don't think there's any other discussion. Is anyone prepared?
Well, excuse me, though. Did we we had mentioned a couple of different amounts here. Are we sticking with what's up there? Or,
Okay, so then let's kind of, I was thinking someone might make a motion, but
I'll make a motion.
Well,
can I have a question though? Can I make one? Ask one.
Okay, why don't you ask a question, then I'll come back to you on the motion.
Because I kept hearing $5,000 to the chamber, but we're talking $5,000 in a monetary, and then $2,500 in labor, right?
Essentially, that's in kind.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Does that cost us then? I mean, does that increase?
Well, what it would do is, at the time that they're putting out barricades, and
go through the numbers and then we'll see disagreement.
I move that we give $5,000 to the Chamber of Commerce, $5,000 to the Economic Vitality Corporation, $4,314 to the San Luis Obispo County Visitors and Conference Bureau, $5,000 to participate in Savor the Central Coast, $5,000 to the Housing Trust Fund, for a total of $24,314.
Does someone want to make a motion or a second on
I'll
that?
Second it.
And then you have a question, Phyllis?
So where is this going to come from?
Well,
that's a really good question. City manager.
As I indicated, what this would do is essentially, if you changed nothing else within the budget, then you would increase that bit of a deficit that we have to still make up.
So we hope that maybe we bring in a little bit more sales tax and a little bit more.
Actually, I would be looking to one of those three areas to actually balance the budget. As long as we have sufficient reductions in those three areas, or the combination of those three items, then we would balance the budget. If for any reason we're not able to achieve that, then I would come back and report that to you, and then you would have to take whatever other action you might want to.
So basically, the shortfall that we've talked about in the general fund, $319,394, we would just add the $24,300. So we would be looking at roughly $343,700.
Right.
And so, yes,
Ms. McBride. So can we make this conditional that we don't have that? If it works into our budget, that these numbers will fly?
It would have to be, I'm thinking conditioned on two of the three things happening, that we get sufficient concessions from mm-hmm. employees, sufficient concessions
whatever
from the fire authority, or the sale of the property. If we do any two of those three, we have enough to cover it.
So that's what I'm saying. I mean, so however it happens, can mm-hmm. Is it possible to make this conditional? Maybe we'd want to, if that's not the case, we might want to come back and rethink some of these numbers.
Mr. Mayor, if I could.
Yes, well.
You know, you probably, at least Stone Soup probably needs their commitment at this point, because they're very close to the event.
And I would be fine with that.
VCB needs it, too, because of the Stone Soup. I mean, sorry, the Savor.
And I would suggest that maybe if you decided to go with the Savor, that you go with those two items, and in another month, when we come back on the 16th, we should have labor agreements completed, and either one of the other two, the concessions from fire or the sale of property, completed.
I mean, I don't want to make this difficult. I just don't want to go into our reserves for something like this.
I agree with.
Yeah, well, I think we all agree. So, you know, when just doing the simple math, it looks like there is a potential, given the three items, looks like when you add those up of, what, $561,000, and then so we're talking about $343,000. So I think it's a good chance that staff will be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would say we're certainly looking at trying to have some savings in all three areas. And I think the good thing is keeping the options open is if the sale of city-owned property takes longer, then we can maybe allow some flexibility in trying to close the gap this year. And then, so I think we should be okay.
That was my take on it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be open to supporting these.
And, of course, it's a budget, so it's projected, as we all know. So
if at mid-year things are, we're going to be positive. Things will turn around. We'll have more sales tax and TOT and all of those things. Okay.
Okay.
So let me just do. How about also? I think. So Debbie, you were your motion was a total of 24,314. All in favor of that?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. All opposed? None. Okay. So we at least have that. So now we really need to get to the official actions that staff has laid out.
And Honorable Mayor, there are four resolutions.
Okay.
And staff would recommend that, or at least advise you that that can be made in one motion.
Okay. All right. Someone want to be brave and make a motion?
I will. Okay. I'm going to make a motion that we adopt the continuing resolution.
That doesn't really kind of, that doesn't wow a lot of people, and I know that there's a lot of supporters of park and recreation, mm-hmm. So is there maybe a name for that department that might make a little more sense? You can, that's not germane to this discussion,
we can come up with a different,
you know, community vitality or something. something to that effect.
The Hugs Department.
The Big Hugs.
Big Hugs Department.
Okay, very good. So there is a motion and a second, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Okay, and I did just want to say to staff, I know it was a tough budget. A lot of hard work went into this, and hopefully, I was just at an economic forecast in Paso Robles, and there were some very positive things said about Grover Beach, and the economy appears to be improving, not as fast as we would like, but certainly improving. So. With that, the special meeting that we had tonight, I'm going to adjourn and reconvene the regular meeting, and we will move into our regular meeting on the consent agenda. Tonight there are three items on consent. There's a treasury report for the period of May 31st through June 13th. There are minutes from the city council meeting of Monday, May 21st, and then there are resolutions for the 2012 general municipal election for the election of certain officers of the city. So this is, I don't have any requests for any members from the public pulling items from consent. Do any members of the council want to pull items from consent?
I did want to discuss one of the points on the minutes of the city council meeting.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and make your comment on that?
Okay. It was actually on the item talking about council discussion regarding retaining the services of a real estate professional, and I did watch it on TV, and I wasn't it. I think the way it's worded is perhaps, I don't think it was what was intended, to retain the services of a real estate professional rather than a broker for property appraisal services. And I thought that what they were saying was the council was asking for was to retain the services of a real estate appraiser rather than a real estate broker for property valuation. In other words, the implication is that a real estate appraiser is a professional and a broker is not. And actually, a real estate broker is a real estate professional as well as. So I didn't think that's what the discussion was. But I, you know, if that's what you intended, then that's fine. But I thought perhaps the wording wasn't exactly what was intended. That maybe something was lost in the note-taking or something. So it says, further council discussion was held regarding retaining the services of a real estate professional rather than a broker for property appraisal services.
It should probably have been appraiser.
That's what I thought they meant. That's what I thought
okay.
was the intent.
So I would just say then, if you feel that that's in fact what was
if
said,
the
then
yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. I was thinking of making a motion to that effect. So I don't know if you have any suggested wording that we might
well,
be able to consider.
I think if you just say retaining the services of a real estate appraiser rather than a broker for property appraisal services, that's good.
Okay.
If that's what the intention, if that is what you all feel you said.
Very good.
An intent.
So with that, why don't you want to make a motion?
I move that we amend that and that we accept the consent agenda otherwise as presented.
I'll second that.
Very good. There's a motion and a second. The staff, did you have any questions? No, any discussion on the motion? If not, roll call.
Councilmember Peters?
Yes.
Councilmember Mulder?
Yes.
Councilmember Bright?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Nichols?
Yes.
And Mayor Scholes?
Yes. Okay, let's move on to item number 7. This is regular business. This is a 5-year capital improvement program for fiscal year 13 through fiscal year 17. Public Works Director, City Engineer Ray.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and Council. The 5-year capital improvement program is a roadmap that provides direction and guidance for the city of Grover Beach regarding the careful planning and managing of its capital and infrastructure assets. Identifying capital projects and their anticipated funding sources assists in the planning and scheduling of finances for projects and the professional resources needed to plan, design, and construct the projects. Projects in the capital improvement program are funded through the general fund, local transportation fund, gas tax fund, utility enterprise funds, and the issuance of city bonds. I might also mention that historically, the redevelopment agency had paid for a number of capital improvement projects, but currently the redevelopment agency no longer exists. Council questions and comments. Number of projects in the CIP between fiscal years 13 and 17 are directly related to development of the Grover Beach Lodge site. These include the beachfront public plaza improvements, that's CIP 271, the West Grand Avenue enhancements, that's CIP 270, the West Grand Avenue looped water main, that's CIP 268, and the utility undergrounding, that's along West Grand Avenue from basically Highway 1 to the beach. Also included in the CIP is the transit station expansion project, that's CIP 312. Good news is this project received $1 million in Proposition 1B grant funding and is expected to receive an additional $1 million in future grant funding. This project, if you recall, will move the bus loading area to the train station site, so passengers no longer have to cross the tracks in order to transfer between trains and buses. Another key project in the capital improvement program is the West Grand Avenue Enhancement Phase 2 project. That's CIP 385. The California Transportation Commission will consider this project for allocation of TE funds at the end of this month, and we're coming up on that rapidly. So we're looking forward to an allocation vote as well as an authorization to proceed vote at the same meeting. Might also want to mention the local street rehabilitation program within the CIP. That's CIP 283. It's proposed to be funded by a combination of gas tax and traffic congestion relief funds in fiscal years 13 and 14 in the amount of $309,000 and some change in fiscal year 13 and approximately $200,000 in fiscal year 14. In the remaining 3 years of fiscal year 15 through 17, the gas tax revenues are expected to be allocated for this project in particular, are expected to be $30,000 per year, and general fund in the amount of $240,000. Your staff reports is $120,000, and that's a typo. $240,000 per year are currently programmed to be dedicated to street rehabilitation. I might also mention that outside of the CIP, the Public Works Department continues to expend approximately $220,000 per year in general funds, about $200,000 a year in gas tax funds, and about $50,000 per year in local transportation funds on general street maintenance and repair. That includes patching potholes, repairing sidewalks, replacing striping and signs, maintaining street trees, and removing graffiti throughout the city. So it's a large investment outside of the local street rehab program that continues to proceed forward. There's some alternatives for council to consider this evening relative to this draft CIP document. By motion, the council could adopt the resolution provided approving the 5-year CIP. By motion, the council could adopt a resolution with minor changes, approving the CIP with minor changes. The council could choose not to adopt the five-year CIP this evening and to provide staff with some additional direction or more significant changes. And tonight, the staff recommendation is council move to adopt the resolution approving the five-year CIP as drafted, and the resolution is provided for you. So this time, I'd like to turn it back to the council for questions and comments.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. Mayor Pro Tem, you have any questions?
Yes. First off, you have not mentioned, I know that the mayor has brought up on a number of occasions, Oak Park and its condition, and that's not on here at all, and this is a five-year plan, and I'm not sure why it's not in there, especially when it has been brought up a number of times by the mayor.
Mayor, if you would, you like me to respond to questions as they come up or hold them till the end?
No, go ahead. Feel free to respond.
Okay. In general, so that would be considered under the local street rehabilitation program.
Yeah.
And council sets the priorities for that program each year. We've also set long-term priorities, which would include arterials and collectors, Oak Park being one of those. So we could certainly consider that to be a top priority as we move forward in the local street rehabilitation program, with the funding that's identified in the CIP. As a separate project, we could also do that within the CIP if you wanted to identify it as a special project outside of the local street rehab program.
I definitely think it should be in there. I'd like comments from the rest of the council on their thoughts on that, as to whether we should or should not include it and where it should be included. In fact, I'd ask the mayor to comment on that.
If I could mention one more thing, too. At the end of the capital improvement program are some cost estimates for future projects, and the Oak Park Boulevard rehabilitation is mentioned in there with an estimate of about $600,000.
Of some of that balance, that reserve balance, to carry the street program for this year.
Okay, so we're not expecting to have less revenue.
Right.
Okay, that was my question there. Okay, thank you. And then the outside of the CIP, this $470,000 that you had talked about, that's expended by the Public Works Department. Now that includes like fixing potholes and that is.
Yeah, it's what I would call the general maintenance.
Just general maintenance. Sidewalks. So you have a big hole in the street. Somebody calls it in. You are Public Works.
That's correct. For example, the repair that was just recently done on West Grand Avenue where the pavement sort of pushed out there.
Right.
So that would come under this.
Okay. All right. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Mona.
Before we go.
Yes.
Was there a determination made as to what caused that problem on Grand at 10th?
Yes.
Do you have that?
Yeah. It was interesting. There's another street below West Grand Avenue. A couple feet down, there's actually a paved asphalt street, the old county road, I would assume, from I don't know how many years ago. The current West Grand Avenue that's paved over the top of that, the base material that was used was not the best, and the pavement thickness was just about 2 inches in the area where it failed. So the combination of fairly heavy loading on top of a fairly thin pavement with fairly poor base material on top of a fairly solid pavement way down there led to the failure. We thought it was water initially, but it doesn't appear to be.
I'll be darned. Thank you very much. Wow.
Okay.
So there's a better road underneath? Is that what you're saying?
Well, better, but it doesn't meet the grades currently, so it's probably not as good.
Okay, any underground rivers? I just have a question. When you talked about the use of the gas tax and then the local transportation funds, I see that's in a minus right now anyway. So we're not going to be using local transportation funds then, are we?
Actually, that has to do with cash flow, if I'm not mistaken, and what is projected in terms of expenditures is largely grant funds. We will spend the dollars up front We will take the dollars to meet those payments out of our pooled cash and then reimburse ourselves as the grants are repaid.
Okay, thank you. And then you also mentioned the use of utility enterprise funds. Okay. As possible uses for the revenue sources for the CIP, but that we wouldn't be using that for the roads, right?
Only in very limited circumstances. For example, a water fund could pay to repave the trench over the top of a replaced water line.
Oh, that type.
Very limited.
Okay, that type thing. All right. Thank you, then.
All right. Councilmember Peterson.
Well, I took this very seriously, and I met with the city manager with most of my questions, and so I don't currently have any questions on it.
Okay. And so for me, I did just want to know the Mayor Pro Tem had brought up Oak Park. So, Greg, I think was your intention showing that it was in future projects identified it, so if the council majority decides that we need to put that in this CIP, then it allows us to plan forward. So that is an option tonight.
It at least gives you an idea of a reasonable level of funding. Might be appropriate to see the expected result on Oak Park. It certainly wouldn't do the whole project, but about $600,000 would get you a significant impact on Oak Park. You could choose two things. You could create a capital project at some future year, or you could dedicate the future street local rehab program for one or more years to that project.
So. Okay. And then just for the clarification on page 3 of the staff report under local street rehabilitation program, when it talked about general funds in the amount of $120,000 per year for fiscal year 15 through 17, I propose for dedicated to street rehabilitation. Maybe, Bob, you can talk to this because I know that we have historically funded out of general fund 200, let's say 40,000.
Actually, if you look, the staff report is in error. If you look at the local street rehabilitation project itself, which is 283, yeah. We have moved that back.
Business item, and I'll just open this to see if there's any member of the public that would like to address the CIP that's before the council. Seeing no one come forward, let me close it, bring it back, and what's the pleasure of the council on this? I think we had talked about maybe including Oak Park in the actual five-year plan, because right now, even though it's listed, it's not actually in the plan, and I know the plan is not constrained per se with respect to revenues and resources, so I was just wondering where the rest of the council was on that item.
I think it needs to be addressed.
It is our main, one of our main streets. Is because it does lead to the freeway, that would be available for grant funding too?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of part of the reason, at least thanks for the Mayor Pro Tem bringing that up, was at least if it's in the CIP and if there are funding opportunities that come along like
right.
grants and whatnot, then it's in our plan. It's not outside the plan, even though I know it's listed as a future project, because we know that we're so nimble in how we modify these CIPs to do projects. So,
well,
yeah.
It's kind of like the IRWM for the water. You have to have it in there in order to get the money.
Yes.
Okay.
I have a question about Oak Park. We didn't lay any fiber optic conduit in Oak Park when we undergrounded the electrical, did we?
That probably was preceding first of all, it preceded
yes.
the network and the actual design of the network. So we weren't putting fiber in at that particular
Which
point.
Which is another really good reason to include it, because Oak Park joins Oceano, Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, and Pismo Beach. I think it's another good reason to include it.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay,
yeah.
With that, then, I would like to make a motion. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, I would move that we adopt the resolution approving the five-year CIP plan for fiscal year 13 to fiscal year 17 with the minor changes.
I'll second that.
And that might change would be?
Oak Park Boulevard.
Okay. So then I guess staff will want to know in what year. We're talking out years, in years, probably 20, I don't know. Staff?
You know, looking at the options, one option would be to sort of collect local street rehab funds over a series of years. That would be about a three-year collection to get to where you're doing something significant on Oak Park. Or we could be a little more optimistic, maybe put it out 2 years and campaign for additional grant funding and other sources to try to get that done as soon as possible.
So you're thinking 2015 maybe?
2015 might be a good at least a holding place for now.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's good. I like that idea.
Appreciate that.
Maker
Thank
of
you.
The motion okay with that?
Yes, absolutely.
Is there a second?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Any other discussion on the motion? Okay. You ready, Donna? Roll call.
Councilman Nichols?
Yes.
Councilman Peterson?
Yes.
Councilman Brent?
Yes.
Councilman
Goldman?
Yes.
And Mayor Schultz? Yes. Okay, let's move on to item number 8, Northern Cities Management Area 2011 Annual Report. Mr. Ray.
First, some background. The Santa Maria Groundwater Basin is the subject of a court action, which resulted in a settlement of the northern area of the basin, including Grover Beach, and a judgment in the overall case, which included that settlement. The judgment requires the cities of Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, Pismo Beach, and Oceano Community Services District to establish a technical management committee to annually monitor and report on the condition of the northern cities portion of the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin. The 2011 annual report was prepared by GEI Consultants and was filed with the court on May 4th under the direction of Henry Weinstock, who is the city's legal counsel for the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin settlement. There's a couple highlights I'd like to bring up with regard to the report, and then, as before, we'll move on to council questions. In 2011, rainfall totaled about 12.9 inches. The average is just over 16, so we were below average rainfall in 2011. Water supply in the Northern Cities Management Area, we'll refer that to that as the NCMA from now on. Water supply in the NCMA for 2011, which includes groundwater, state water, and Lopez water, is estimated to have exceeded demand by approximately 5,495 acre feet. Now, that statement, you need to understand that would assume that we collectively and collaboratively manage all the water sources within the NCMA. That would be the three cities in the Oceana Community Services District. Applied irrigation and rural water funding that council receive and file the 2011 NCMA annual report, but I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
So any questions, staff? Okay. Debbie?
I have two, and frankly, they're political questions. I'm going to ask them, though. The first one is, since NIPOMO voted not to spend money to bring water from Santa Maria, does that then therefore commit all the rest of us to spending more money to bring water for NIPOMO?
No.
Good.
The court stipulation is that the NMMA, that's the NIPOMO Mesa Management Area, that they bring in 3,000 acre feet of outside water. I believe it NCSD, which is the NIPOMO Community Services District, was specifically in the court stipulation tasked with that. So there, as my understanding is, they're continuing to move forward to decide how that's going to happen.
So then that means the second question is probably not as relevant. I know that we've reduced water usage in the city, and a lot of the motive we've incentivized it, of course, as a city, and we've publicized the need to do so. And I know finances have, for many of us, played a big part in reducing water. My thought is, though, that so as individuals we control that, but my question is for the ag users, not the Arroyo Grande, but the agricultural users of the water. It would seem to me that they may take the view that it's not in their best interest to conserve water because that would then perhaps reduce the allocation to them. Is that correct, or am I off base on that?
I can answer, or you can answer that. Yeah. But
I think we at this point in time, especially in view of the fact that there are still appeals pending on this matter, I would prefer that staff didn't opine on what other people may or may not be thinking or what their motivations are.
Rhetorical question. Thank you.
Okay. There are... Mayor Pro Tem?
Yeah, out of curiosity, the court has directed that we do this study on an annual basis and a report. Who pays for that? And how is... I assume each one of the agencies contributes to that cost, and how is that allocated?
That's correct. Each agency pays based on their percentage of groundwater allocation.
Okay, very good. The other question I have, just for clarification, in paragraph 3, you mentioned that the groundwater levels near the shoreline have recovered to about 5 feet above sea level. And in paragraph 5, you state that the spring monitoring indicated that groundwater levels along the coast were approximately 10 feet above sea level. Could you give me a little explanation on that, shoreline versus coast, and why there's 5 feet difference?
Yes. Let me apologize for the confusion between those two paragraphs. Really, paragraph 3 and paragraph 5 represent two different sampling events. We have a new... We develop contours based on a sampling event, and we have historically done that on the fall or November sampling event. This year, in order to have data and contour, groundwater contours, available to compare to the Napomo Mesa management area, we developed groundwater contours based on the spring monitoring event, which is in April. Each monitoring event represents a different groundwater condition, and this is pretty much typical what you'd expect to find. In fall or, you know, March, April area, just after a period of the greatest rainfall, you'd expect groundwater elevations to be the highest. And in the close to spring and certainly midsummer, you'd expect them to be their lowest. The good news is both seem to show levels above the seawater elevation. So that's good news.
So you're putting everybody on the same page.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. So they're both the near shore contour. We basically draw a groundwater contour right along the shoreline, and that both these paragraphs represent that same contour, just different times.
Okay, thank you very much.
That's all right. Okay. So this is just a receive and file. So we're good.
Okay.
Where am I? We have no pulled consent items this evening. Council committee reports. Karen, you have anything?
I do not. My meetings are all next week.
Okay. Phyllis?
Nothing reportable. I went to Housing Trust, and they discussed three potential loans that we were going to look at. And then I was at the RAC. The only thing important with the RAC is originally on June 22nd, there was going to be a fracking symposium, and that has been canceled at this time until probably October. There are going
to
be some
response to the proposal in Wasna, or is that just something that...
No, actually, it came about based upon what was happening in Santa Barbara.
Oh.
And how they came up with an ordinance that chemicals had to be made public that was being used in the ground.
Gotcha.
And our county was avoiding the fracking issue until they saw what was happening elsewhere.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you. Bill?
The only report I have is on the water recycling forum that we had, and we already heard a brief report on that from Mr. Snook early on this evening. I do want to comment that I think it was a very successful forum. We had 8 speakers that were there that gave their dissertation, each one of them. And we also had the panel discussion, which was moderated by Tony Ferrara, the mayor of Rio Grande, and I think he did an excellent job. The questions that were submitted by the public that were there, and there were approximately 100 people that attended that forum.
our goal was to increase the public awareness of some of the problems that need to be discussed and resolved as we continue to move forward towards developing a water recycling program. I think it was very successful. I think it was well accepted by the public, and I'm very pleased with the results of it. That's it.
Okay. I don't have anything to report tonight. So let's go to item number 9, which is the selection of voting delegate and alternate.
I didn't get to report.
I'm sorry, Deb. Did I miss you?
You missed me. And I had a question of Mayor Pro Tem Nichols, too.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Debbie.
I'll speak up. I had a question of Mayor Pro Tem Nichols. There had been some articles in the press about a possible fine, and I wondered if where the funds would come from to pay that if there is a fine levied.
I'm not sure where that'll come from yet. I don't know what the fine's going to be. It's not something that can be discussed in public at this time.
Okay.
It's confidential. When it all comes out, all of that information will be available to you.
Okay.
Yep. Question?
I wonder why it's confidential.
Okay. She had a question about why it's confidential.
By law. Counsel, could you respond to that, please? The negotiations on the fine against the county?
At this point in time, I assume, and I don't know anything about the details of what's going on, but I assume that the district is negotiating with the board. And,
correct.
And as pending or potential litigation, because these items, more often than not, can end up in litigation. They've been instructed by their attorney not to publicly comment on it, and that's very legitimate.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Debbie?
I only have one to report, and the other two are meeting in the next couple of weeks. The Grover Beach Chamber of Commerce, as you'll have noticed, has been very active. They've come to our last two meetings and spoken, and I really just want to commend the members of both the Grover Beach and the Arroyo Grande Board and chambers. They're working very, very hard to work out the practical details of how the two chambers combine. And they had a very successful, what was it called, their Foodie Fest about a month ago was exceptionally successful. You know, as businesses usually go, the first year they lose money, the second year they break even, this is they're doing well, and the third year they make a little money. And they made, I believe, $1,800 for their first event. So that's really exceptional performance, and so they're still working some of those details out. And they're, I think they're doing a very laudable and time-worthy and hard-working job on getting the job done, and I have to say I've been very impressed with the folks who are working on it at this point.
Okay, very good. Again, sorry for missing you on that.
That's okay.
So let's talk about the selection of a voting delegate and alternate for the 2012 League of California Cities Annual Conference, and I think at this point the Mayor Pro Tem has requested to go, and I think you've been listed, and then I think Phyllis is interested, and I believe... had anyone else expressed interest in attending?
Oh, that's not what the staff report says. It says you and Mayor Pro Tem Nichols are the only officials scheduled to attend.
I sent an email.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's three of you?
Yeah, and I'm going to be attending on someone else's dime, so the city's going to get the benefit of me being there. And not going to have to pick up any of the freight with respect to registration, lodging, or any of that. So I think it does allow an additional member to attend. So the issue is just selecting who the voting delegates will be. I think historically it has been, I think the mayor has been the delegate and the Mayor Pro Tem the alternate. And so I'm thinking that giving, did I see a hand go up?
Pardon me?
Did I see a hand go up? Did you have a comment?
No, I was just saying that's whatever has been in
Well, I was thinking about maybe allowing the Mayor Pro Tem to be the delegate this year, and then I would just be the alternate. I was actually thinking that you'd be the alternate, but maybe that'd be too much for first time. So,
so moved.
Okay.
Second.
So, Donna, did you get that? Okay. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Council Communications. Who's got communications tonight?
I had one more question that I forgot to ask on another matter.
Well, that's passed. What is your communication?
Okay.
What's your question?
My question was, it was on the consent agenda, and I just forgot to ask it, but where it was describing the elections, and it stated that Mayor Pro Tem Nichols, Mayor Scholes, and Council Member Molnar were elected in the last election. However, we didn't hold an election. So were they elected or were they appointed?
Once they're appointed, they become elected per election code. The answer is it's a correct verbiage.
So they were both appointed and elected?
Once they become appointed, once they take their seat, per election code, they are elected.
Okay.
They are considered elected.
Kind of late to ask this.
So, however, Councilmember Bright was brought in for another council member who resigned. She was also considered elected? She was appointed by the council, and she then was considered elected?
I think she was appointed not during an election.
Ah, okay. So they have to be...
process was part of the election process.
I see. Okay, thank you. Yes. That clarifies that point.
We're all illegal.
I have one council communication,
sure.
I guess. I'm just going to say it under this, and that is I just want to commend our Parks and Rec Department for another summer concert series program. Well done. It was very enjoyable, and I thank you very much for all your efforts.
And I wanted to commend staff for the excellent budget report. Mm-hmm. It was, for me, the easiest to understand. And also, I was really pleased to see staff's accomplishments over the years, because they've been working on reduced staff and reduced hours, and they've really accomplished a lot, and it was very encouraging.
Okay.
That's a very good comment.
Well, city manager, any reports or comments tonight?
No, Mr. Mayor.
City attorney?
None, thank you.
Do you want to cover the closed session items? I guess there's three tonight.
It is the intent of the city council to meet on three items in closed session. The first one is consideration of a claim under the Government Tort Claims Act filed by Al-Sayed against the city. The other one is instructions to negotiating party with regard to piece of real property, that piece of real property being the city skate park. And the last one, I believe, is labor negotiations.
Very good. With that, we're in a closed session.